It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Tom Merritt returns along with Christina Warren and Tim Stevens. We'll talk a little bit about Pokemon Go and what it means culturally, about the big news week behind us and the big news week ahead of us, and how new media is going to change how we gather the news, and a little bit about Tesla and more. It's all ahead. This Week in Tech is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 571, recorded July 17th, 2016. Fomented reality. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Be a meeting MVP. GoToMeeting is the online meeting tool that lets you easily collaborate and present from anywhere with one click, so you always put on your best performance. Step up your meeting game and start your free 30-day trial at GoToMeeting.com. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at Gazelle.com today. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/TWiT and entering the promo code TWIT. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a cover page or beautiful website for your portfolio, blog, business, or online store. Enter the offer code TWIT and get 10% off. Time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news. And I feel like this is going to be a cozy, kind of fun TWIT because it's my buddies, my friends. Christina Warren is here from Mashable, Film Girl. Always great to see you, Christina. Love having
great
you
to
on
be
the
here.
Show. And yes, you are playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah, I'm absolutely playing Pokemon Go.
Okay, are you catching a Fearow right now?
I'm not. Yeah, right. It took me a second. No, I'm absolutely playing Pokemon Go on two different phones with two different accounts because...
What?
Okay, this is problematic. I wanted to start out with a Pikachu, and I realized I couldn't do that starting over whole new game.
Right.
And then I started catching Pokemon on that account that I didn't have on my other account, so I'm kind of going back and
forth.
You
need
both.
Gotta get them all. Also here, Tim Stevens, who is now playing the game. He wasn't when you dialed in 10 minutes ago.
I succumbed to peer pressure as of about 5 minutes ago, so I'm now part of the club.
Oh, man. Welcome from theroadshow.com, where he covers driving and Upper New York State. It's great to have you, Tim.
Thanks, Leo.
And my old buddy Tom Merritt is here from Daily Tech News Show. Great to have you, dailytechheadlines.com. And wait a minute, you have two. What is this?
Well, Daily Tech Headlines is just the headlines. If you're looking for the news in less than 10 minutes a day, rather than a full 30,
so you're doing two shows now.
Yeah.
Nice. Excellent. Do you do them at different times, or you do one after the other? How does that
work? Yeah, I knock Daily Tech Headlines out in the morning. It's audio only. It's for people who just want the boiled down headlines.
Yeah.
And then Daily Tech News Show is still the same show it always was.
I think there's a real market for just the quick hit.
Yeah.
You know what we're trying to do, and you probably should too, is try, and I think we can, is get it on the Amazon Echo as an option for the daily briefing, you know?
Oh, yeah. The briefing would be perfect for that. That's a good idea.
Oh, shoot. Damn it.
I use BBC for my briefing.
Yeah. They don't have enough choices, but I think they're going to add some more, and I think that would be
a good. But the most important question is, are you Team Mystic, Team Valor, or Team...
I am Valor. Red, what are you?
I'm Mystic. Valor. I'm blue.
And you're Valor, Christina?
I'm Valor, absolutely.
All right. Tim, you've got five levels before you have to decide, but let me just point out.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, red seems to be dominant, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's more Valor.
Blue in my neighborhood.
But I think yellow is easily the smallest contingent.
Yeah, I feel like that's true.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe that's the one to choose, or maybe not. Maybe do you want to be on the biggest or the smallest?
I'd rather be in the smallest, I think. But I've got five levels anyway, so people can pitch me anyway and try to get me to join.
This is okay. So if you just tuned in and you had high hopes that we would not talk about Pokemon Go,
let them be quashed now.
Look, it could be worse. The Republican convention starts tomorrow. We could be talking about that. So, by the way, I understand that the Cleveland Convention Hall is a Poke Gym.
Oh, I'm sure. And so, then blue and red become whole different things.
That means a different thing. That yeah. Yeah. And yellow could be libertarian. So we'll
Yeah. There's no green, unfortunately.
they need green.
Yeah.
Wonderful to see you all here, and always fun. And I guess in a way Pokemon Go. So I'm getting email now from people. Nice guy, 50-year-old guy says, "I'm 50-year-old guy. I love you. I love the network. Got two young daughters. Please do yourself a favor. Stop talking about Pokemon Go."
That's nice of him to instruct you.
Do yourself a favor. Usually people say, "I will never listen to you again if you don't stop." This one is saying, "Just take some advice from
me. Down.
Take it down a notch." But it's a story. You cannot deny it.
No, it's a huge story.
Question one. Have you guys ever seen anything on this scale of virality? I mean, Gangnam
real
Style.
World aspect of it, right? Like, everywhere I go when we're out and about playing it, there are definitely other people playing it. It's it's not like, oh, we're the only ones here.
Great. Everywhere you go.
Everywhere. I mean, we've certainly seen big viral hits before, right? With games and with apps. But other than, just like almost a utility app and an Instagram or a Facebook or a Snapchat, this is the first time I've seen a game do this. And certainly this quickly, I think this is caught on even faster than any of the social networks I talked about before. I mean, like Tom, when I go out and I'm playing, in the streets in New York, I'm not alone. And even the first day, it launched on a Wednesday night, and that Thursday morning I was walking to my subway stop, and I was not the only one who had my phone out playing Pokemon Go. And this is 6 hours, 7 hours after it launched. So it's something I can't recall seeing anything this big, this fast before.
It's great to see something with so many positive aspects, too. People actually getting out, walking around, getting some exercise, meeting each other, teaming up to capture these things. I think it's a great story. Obviously, some people are having a negative reaction because it is all over every airwave possible at this point. But I think it's a great story that it's something that's actually getting people out and doing things and being sociable rather than just.
And we've had people cheering like, "Hey, Pokemon, woo." It's a positive thing for the different people that are playing it, too.
When I walk downtown. And there, if there's a lure set, and that's the thing that attracts players because you can get more Pokemon faster there. If there's a lure set and you can see it, especially if there's an area where there's several stops within an area that you can go. There's a park over here nobody goes to. Remember Penry Park, Tom, up on the hill there with the cannon?
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody goes there because it's up on a hill. You have to climb stairs to get to this postage stamp park. And it's not that interesting. But it has three Pokestops in the park, all within reach of one another. And people set lures in all three. And there's dozens of people up on this hill that never has anybody but, maybe a homeless guy. He's wondering, what the hell is going on?
Where he's like, would you please let me just have some time to myself?
This is my house. What are you doing here? And but there's friendly. You go team red, team yellow. There's friendly. There. It isn't. I think it looks, as you see people walk down the street, a little bit antisocial, but there is a social component to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what's so interesting to me. So the original Pokemon game, if you think about it, was pretty social in a virtual sense. You would take a Link cable and connect your Game Boy or Game Boy Color or whatever, and you could trade Pokemon and battle that way, right? So there was definitely a social aspect, even though you were obsessed with your screen. With Pokemon Go, it's almost the inverse, whereas you can't do anything. We can say what team we're on, but I can't give you a Pokemon, Leo. I can't battle
soon,
you.
Soon, I understand. That's coming.
Soon, I understand that's coming, but I can't do that right now. Instead, what I can do is if I run into Tim, and we're in the neighborhood together, we can talk and we both be like, "Oh, there's one over here. I found one over there." So it's a weird thing where you don't have the social aspect inside the game itself, but instead the entire outside world has strangely become a lot more social because we've all been kind of forced to converse with one another.
I kind of love going to Friday evening, we went down, been to the big city, Santa Rosa. It's the county seat, you know. And I kind of, it used to be in the old days on a warm summer night, people would be out promenading, walking around. And then in the last 10 years, it's just gotten pretty, not so much, kind of deserted. People don't go out anymore. This, it was like the old days. There were all these people out of, and different generations, families. Admittedly, they were all staring at their phone, but not, you know. So the question really is what is this phenomenon? Here's a graph from SurveyMonkey Intelligence. Peak daily active users. It is already, in less than 2 weeks, the biggest U.S. mobile game ever, besting Candy Crush Saga. Draw Something. Remember Draw Something? That was over in a week.
Yeah.
As Zynga bought them, and then...
They bought them, and then it died, and they were like, what?
Clash Royale, which came out, and Slither.io, which came out this year, easily besting all of those. The real question, and I think a lot of the naysayers say, oh, yeah, in 2 weeks, it'll be Pokemon Who? I don't know if that's the case. I think this has legs.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they can continue to add more Pokemon to it, if they can continue to add features, there's been reports that if you go into the code, they're going to have sponsored gyms, like they might have a partnership with McDonald's. So every McDonald's location is a gym. If they do add in the social features, like being able to, you know, battle one another and trade Pokemon with one another, I think that could keep people engaged. Is it going to be this huge, like, viral phenomenon forever where everybody is doing it? No, of course not. But I think that this, more than maybe some other types of viral hits we've seen, has staying power, provided they can continue to update the game, get rid of the bugs, continue to onboard new players, because there's something simple about it. It's not a very, you know, like, it's not a huge game. It's not that complex at all. It's really easy to do. There's not a lot of kind of overhead. The gaming mechanics are really basic, but there's something really fun about it that, you know, and not to mention the nostalgia factor for a lot of us, that I think will keep this enduring longer than maybe, you know, the Draw Somethings out there. At least that's the hope. I mean, or at least maybe, hopefully for Nintendo's sake, you know, that they can draw this out until the real Pokemon game comes out in the fall and gets, you know, that customer base really excited.
Nintendo's
stock. Yeah, I wonder where the bottom of it is. You know, it will definitely not stay at this new, like, everyone's interested in it level. But will they be able to sustain a certain number of people that will always be out in the parks and you'll always see the Pokemon Go people? Or will it go more towards what Ingress became, where it's like, yeah, there's people playing it, but you don't really notice them?
Nintendo stock, of course, huge jumps. Does Nintendo benefit from this, or didn't they sell the Pokemon property off to the Pokemon company?
They own 33%, I think, of the Pokemon company. Is that right?
Yeah,
Christina?
That's correct. And they license, I mean, they own the Pokemon characters, and then the Pokemon company handles the licensing. And Pokemon company, of course, then work with Niantic. So they get some money from this game. I think what this really helps with them more than anything, though, is the fact that people are actually talking about Nintendo in a positive way. We're not being like, okay, at E3, we saw Zelda, and that was it. And there's a console coming out that no one is really that excited about. Instead, we're all really stoked about the fact that, you know, a Nintendo property is actually doing gangbusters on a handheld. And people like me are thinking, God, you know, how much better would this game be if, not to take anything away from Niantic, but how much better would this be if this was like a fully robust Pokemon experience from Nintendo and not licensed? And so it makes you kind of hope and cross your fingers and go, please, Nintendo, you know, like, seriously consider making, you know, mobile first games that are not dedicated solely to your console or your handhelds.
Mario Go.
Yeah.
Well, that's the question, is who benefits from this? I mean, Niantic is really taking a property, Ingress, that it created, and it's just skinned, basically, Ingress, and made it much more appealing, much more friendly. And they benefit because Ingress, the players of Ingress, were the ones who established all of these Pokestops and Pokegyms way back when. It's interesting, in Petaluma, the places of interest, the Pokegyms, are mostly murals, not so much buildings. Mm-hmm. They're
it's
weird.
Same in my neighborhood.
Is it the same there?
Same here.
And it's because of Ingress, right? People, I don't understand how it happened. The company started in 2010. It was called Keyhole. John Hankey, Mr. Hankey, I like to call him, formed it. and Google bought Keyhole. Keyhole was satellite imagery, and Google added the Keyhole satellite imagery to Google Maps and Google Earth. And I guess what happened is once they were internal at Google, the engineers, Hanke and a couple of engineers, created Niantic Labs. That was a Google company. Did Field Trip, right? Remember that? Which was walking around and getting like messages about points of interest. Ingress.
Yeah, that was fun.
And Ingress was kind of one of those cult hits. It never broke out, but was... Can you still play it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still around.
Yeah.
But I think they learned a lot from Ingress. Licensed the Pokemon characters and created Pokemon Go. Does Google... Google spun it out. I wonder if Google...
Yeah, Google spun it out.
Do they probably, though, have significant...
They have a stake in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Nintendo has a stake in one side, Google has a stake in the other, and Apple's getting 30% of all the in-game transactions on iPhones.
Yep. On iPhones.
So everybody's making money.
But it's all run by the CIA, if you listen to the conspiracy.
Well, all right. So what are the privacy implications? There was a misstep early on where you could use your Google account, and most people did because the Pokemon trainer accounts were blocked like crazy because so many people were using it. So they signed up with Google, and the way it was set up was incorrect, and it gave them full Google permissions, which is typically only given to browsers and operating systems. Niantic said that was a mistake. They patched it. It's been patched all around. It now does the normal kind of permissions that any game might do using the OAuth features of Google. But there are still persist these concerns. For instance, people saying, you're just handing your continuous GPS coordinates over to some strange company that might be handing it over to the CIA. Is there a privacy concern?
I don't think so, personally. I think people aren't really aware of how much of that data is already being tracked by them. Certainly if they're using any kind of navigation software in their phones.
Google already knows everywhere you are.
I was going to say, Google already knows where you are. Yeah.
All you have to do is look at your Google dashboard. You can see everywhere you've been, your location history, unless you've disabled that.
Right. And anytime that Google predicts navigation for you and says, hey, are you trying to go here? I'll give you directions. And obviously, Google's already figured out that's where you're going
to.
So they know where you're going before you even get there.
Yeah.
So this sort of thing certainly doesn't bother me, you know, so long as users are getting something out of it. And obviously, you know, people are having a good time with it. So that's fine. It's not a problem for me. I think that it's just something that people are still slowly getting around the idea that their phones know a lot more about them than they think they do.
I feel like the key is always transparency. As long as I know that it's collecting data about me. And in this case, I know that Pokemon Go is collecting location data because it can't work otherwise. And I know what they're going to do with it. Then I have the right to either play the game or not. What was disturbing is that when you did log in with a Google account, it didn't say, would you like to give full permission? It just signed you up and gave full permission. I'm still waiting for Google to explain how any authentication could ever give full permission, even by accident, without alerting the user that it was about to do so.
That's a good point.
No, totally. And I mean, honestly, that was a really big, to me, that was, I think, the reason that they had to patch it so quickly and came back with their response so quickly, because that wasn't just a violation. I think that's technically a violation of Google's APIs. You know, there's supposed to be a pop-up that says, this is what you give and this is what it can do. And in fact, that's now what the Google account login says. It'll say, we cannot access your account, but we can. We know your email address and, you know, it's just like Leo was saying, a simple OAuth, but it didn't give you any of that before. And I think that's a violation of Google's policies around using their login. It's certainly a violation of App Store rules, because the App Store is very clear about, at least on iOS, saying, you know, and this is where the problem was on the iOS side, that if you're taking permission for some sort of other third-party login, you've got to display what's happening to the user. And the fact that it wasn't is problematic. And then it kind of makes you think, at least to me anyway, I'm going, how many other apps are out there that are using Google tokens that don't show up the proper modal window? You know, it's,
you could find out. It's easy enough. You go to your account access and you could see. In fact, the good side of this is I think it brought a lot of people to that part of Google,
their page, to see
what apps had app permissions, what the permissions were, and to turn off any apps that they didn't want to continue with those permissions. I, of course, immediately turned off Niantic. And
I definitely found a couple myself. Yeah.
That you'll notice they had the same.
That app has not been around in years. Why does that still have permission?
Do it with Twitter and Facebook, too. Because you know, these single sign-on systems, that's, you know, you want to make sure you prune those periodically.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a benefit, I guess, to this. Boy, you know, one thing that struck me is it's a shame Google didn't come up with this before Google Glass fizzled out. Because Glass would have been the perfect Perfect for Pokemon Go.
Totally. Well, already we've seen, you know, somebody's got kind of like a demo setup of how it could work with HoloLens. And obviously HoloLens isn't perfect for Pokemon Go because you're kind of tethered to your device. But to me, this just kind of proves that eventually, you know, if not this particular game, other types of games will be able to kind of take advantage of this stuff, this sort of augmented reality kind of world.
Augmented reality.
Absolutely, fogmented reality.
Because, and in fact, most people probably by now have turned it off to save battery life and to make it easier to catch Pokemon. But it was cool, and the smart thing was, it spawned a million Instagram shots of Pokemon in your world. But I also think there is an icebreaker. It's going to make people a little bit more comfortable with the idea of technology in the real world and kind of an interface between technology and your real environment.
Yeah, this is what people will look back and say, augmented reality broke through into public consciousness with Pokemon Go, because now you can say, if someone says, what's augmented reality? You can say Pokemon Go, and a large percentage of people will understand, oh, okay, I get it now.
And it makes us more comfortable with walking around. I guess we already were somewhat with maps, but maybe more so walking around, interacting with our real world using our device.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that the difference is between, you know, a mapping situation, it's a utility, and so you're trying to find a place to go, and so you can kind of, you're not that self-conscious about it. This, as people are becoming less and less self-conscious about, you know, the fact that, like, they've got their phone out and are looking for Pokemon in the middle of the world, I think will kind of lessen the stigma for future types of games like this.
We were pulled over at the side of the road at a Pokestop. And just having fun watching people walking down the sidewalk, looking at their phones and trying to say, okay, just on their phone or Pokemon? Right. And you could tell because they would stop and start, you know, spinning and catching Pokemon.
You could absolutely tell.
Yeah. But it made me aware of how many people just walk around looking at their phones who weren't playing
anyway.
Pokemon.
Yeah. It feels like this is somehow qualitatively as well as quantitatively different from anything we've ever seen before. And it's hard to say what exactly it means. For instance, you know, we know now that self-driving cars and Uber and many of these vehicles that are mapping the world have all sorts of utility for the company that owns them. What can Google do or Niantic do? Because Google gets the data, right? This is the stack goes through Google. So they're using Google code, they're using the maps. So all the data is going through Google. What can they do with that?
I guess they could look at certain types of gathering patterns.
Patterns.
You know? Yeah. See what sorts of people are nearby, what times they'll congregate, you know, what types of, you know, maybe even, you know, how people will move through things. Yeah, I mean, I would just think pattern data would be one of the things they could get.
I was just going to say it's a little bit clouded by it's only data of people playing the game versus something like Waze, which is everybody who's driving. So you can't really tell if that is normal for that area or if that's just because it happens to have a gym.
Right.
But yeah, there's something there for sure in being able to tell population clusters and which stops and gyms get the most traffic, et cetera.
And there are, of course, the revenue opportunities as well when it comes to licensing these things and creating deals and, you know, getting some money off of a drink if you're playing Pokemon Go, that kind of thing, which ultimately I think is where this is of course headed.
Huge money in this. They haven't begun to tap the gold mine that is this game.
Yeah, no, I mean, the only real challenge I think they're going to have is obviously kind of striking while the iron is still really hot, because I'm not like some of the skeptics who think this is going to disappear overnight. I think that this is going to last longer, but they've got to start, you know, turning on that monetization spigot, you know, ASAP beyond just the in-app purchase stuff, because, you know, while you've got people engaged, start making the money. Don't fall into the trap of Zynga, you know, and draw something, you know, as you were kind of mentioning before, and not, you know, taking advantage of it while people are out there.
Well, I wonder if one of the parallels is Blizzard, in that you have to keep adding things to the game like they did with World of Warcraft to say, okay, it's not just enough to have an MMO. How do you keep people playing it? Pokemon Go is going to have to figure that out as well.
And I think we are smarter about this kind of thing. I think a lot of these guys are thinking hard about this, and it's not a complete accident that this game is such a success. They learned from Ingress. Mm-hmm. This is not accidental. Timing might be accidental. And by the way, timing greatly benefited it because I think we were all a little depressed over the last couple of weeks. And having something fun that brings us out of our houses, we had a real salubrious effect psychologically, at least in the U.S., but I would guess around the world.
And kids getting out of school as well. Pretty good timing there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Summertime.
Perfect timing on that. Yeah. Now everybody's out for the summer.
Can't keep the servers up. That's the biggest frustration. That could hurt them, right? People get frustrated and say, I'm not playing this dumb game, although I don't see that happening.
That's the magical thing about it, right? Like, this, by all respects, everyone should have abandoned this
we
game because it's unreliability, but people just keep playing it anyway.
It's like Twitter.
Exactly. Well, it is just like, wow. It is just like early World of Warcraft days where like literally like you get in and like you're like, I'm never logging out again because I'm on right now. I'm on the server. I'm never getting off again. Or you continue to just kind of like hammer it and open the app over and over again until you get in. But yeah, you're right, Tom. By all accounts, we should all have been like, screw this. But instead we're like, no, please, 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 you know, give us a shot to
all right, I'll kill it again for the fifth time in the past 10 minutes, but I'm not stopping playing the game.
But given the amount of money they're already making, and the early estimates were $2 million a day, I would say it's a order of magnitude greater than that today. So they're clearly making plenty of money. Why can't they keep the servers up?
It's like anything else. You can never properly estimate a hit. And so whenever you've got something that's successful, it will always go past whatever the system administrator has expected because you can't test a hit until you have a hit.
Right.
And I assume that's what's going on.
They initially slowed the rollout. They went to America, Australia, New Zealand, but they have seemed to turn the steam back on. Probably, Christina, as you point out, they want to capitalize on this before it all goes away.
Totally.
So they went to Germany, Spain, the UK, and Italy, and then now 26 more countries, Austria, Belgium, Bulgaria, Croatia, Cyprus, Czech Republic, Denmark, Estonia, Finland, Greece, Greenland, Hungary, Iceland, Ireland, Latvia, Lithuania, Europeans. Luxembourg, Malta.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in Russia, notice.
So all of Europe, basically. I wonder when it's coming to Asia. That's going to be, I think, a really interesting test. You know,
hopefully by the end of August, because I'm going to Japan.
Yeah, I wonder how many people in Japan, because you know they are so obsessed with Pokemon anyway.
Oh my god, it would kill the servers because 100% would play.
Yeah,
you'd have 100% penetration. Oh my god, when are you going to Japan?
End of August, first week of September.
Okay, you must report back.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you'll be
if
in the
they have it on.
You'll be on the front line. They'll have it on. You'll be on the front lines of the Pokemon Mania in Tokyo. It'll be insane.
Hope I can capture all the gyms because I've already been playing for a long time.
Lots of concern. Well, of course, there's a lot of hate going on. A lot of people who aren't playing hate it. And, you know, it's gotten almost to the point sometimes where you're walking around playing it and people are being rude. I had an older fellow go, hey, I was like 20 feet away. I said, what? He said, I don't want you to run into me. Okay, I won't run into you. I actually said, I had the presence of mind to say, sir, if I run into you, you will know it. Which was rude because I understand how they feel. Like it must be really frustrating and annoying if you don't get it. And all these people are doing it. It's like, what's wrong with you people? It's like the invasion of the body snatchers.
It's bad enough when everyone's walking around looking at their phones, which is already happening. Now you have people who unexpectedly stop and are so absorbed that they don't realize the traffic is flowing around them. So, yeah, it takes a little bit of self-responsibility to say, you know what, if you're playing this, pull over to the side of the sidewalk, get out of the way of traffic. Don't keep walking while you're battling, et cetera.
You saw the amazing, I know you've all seen the amazing video from Central Park.
Yeah.
Where I guess a rare Pokemon shows up and the crowd stampedes. And what's amazing in this video is right at the beginning of it, you see a guy, he's in the street, jump out of his car and abandon it. Leave it. Just run away. I guess, what was the Pokemon they saw? It was rare.
Vaporeon.
A Vaporeon. See, watch. Oh, wait, let me roll it back a little bit. This guy gets out of the car and leaves it. He goes running into the park.
And look at everybody's taping it. And
to be fair, that traffic is not moving. So
right.
Yeah, he's like, I've got time.
It was a Vaporeon. Is that even that rare?
Yeah, it's fairly rare.
Yeah. Ask my expert.
I mean, I don't know.
That's an evolved Eevee. So if you have an Eevee, you're going to get a Vaporeon eventually. But, man, it'll save you some time. Eevee's evolved into a whole bunch of stuff. So,
but what's
I have a Volteon. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Christine. I'm sorry.
No, I was just
I have one too, Leo. It's okay.
I was just going to say, what's amazing is that, like, literally, I think there were people who probably were playing and wanted to do it, and then there was probably, because it's Central Park and you just see a ton
there
of people
there anyway.
Like, they're just like, oh my God, what's happening? I have to be part of this. Like, half and half, I think, there was people who were wanting to play the game and people who were just like, oh, crowd is moving, must follow, must record.
It was a flash mob.
It's completely.
A spontaneous flash mob. So far, the good news is not too many people have been hurt. A couple of guys walked off a cliff. Probably there were other circumstances involved. You'd have to be pretty oblivious to walk off a cliff.
It is not normal expected behavior in this game.
No, it doesn't urge you to walk off cliffs.
No,
not even close. So
very early on, a young woman found a body in a river.
Yeah. That's not the game's fault. If anything, that just was probably like
a good thing.
It was a good thing. I mean, also shows us how much screwed up stuff happens. Where did that happen? Montana? It's like, wow.
Yeah.
The good news is, by the way, those guys suffered injuries, but they didn't die. The moderate injuries.
Well, that is very good.
So they're okay. And probably great injuries to they're quite embarrassed. Great injuries to their ego, their pride. That's just dumb.
I mean, cliff implies like, you know, roadrunner type wily coyote. This is a beach where it was a little bit of a sand break that fell down. It wasn't a huge drop.
Yeah. Actually, I think that's one of the things that's going to be a side effect. This is a lot of media hysteria about how people do stupid things.
We're all watching for it. And then, of course, last week there was the robberies, which was... You know, I think that my tagline when I had to write about that, I was like, this is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people go into Pokestops to ambush people and rob them. Although at this point, it might get harder to do that because as stops become more popular, more and more people are going to show up and you might be, you know, like if you're trying to jump someone and there are like 20 Pokemon Go players around, it might not be the best.
I think it's good for it's good for our downtowns. Here is a public service I give you, MMOServerStatus.com. This is a site that...
it's back up. I couldn't get to MMOServerStatus.com. Really.
It brought the server status down. So it shows you ping times in not all the regions, but in the most of the regions. So it's down right now in the UK, Spain, Germany, and Italy, and Portugal, but it's going all right in the US, Australia, Netherlands, New Zealand, and other regions. It's just bizarre. It's just bizarre. I feel like they ought to know. They ought to know how to scale up. I think the problem is you can't buy enough servers.
Well, and there's also reports of a DDoS attack against them this week, too.
Is that credible? That was from a hacker team called, what do they call themselves? Some silly name. Poodle Corp. Know. Poodle Corp took credit.
I mean, DDoS.
If I'm Poodle Corp, I'm going to take credit.
DDoSes are easy to perform, and they're also easy to take credit for. So who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
I wouldn't doubt that someone has tried it. Whether it's the reason for this or not, who knows?
From the Hill, the Capitol Hill blog, thehill.com. Pokemon Go craze swarms Capitol Hill. Not just tourists, but I would best staffers.
Oh, yeah. You know that the staffers and the interns, this is what they're doing right now.
Fortunately, our members of Congress are probably not playing Pokemon Go, but only because they have BlackBerries.
No, they don't. Most of them have iPhones.
Here's Lynn Jenkins. She's a member of Congress. Things I've caught in my office, mice, and this, a Spiro.
Yeah. Depends on the demo you're after. You might want to play Pokemon.
Yeah, be good for your career. Here's the U.S. Marines found a Pikachu. Got to catch them all.
protecting our Pikachus.
Yeah.
Thank you, boys.
Remember that photo of John McCain playing like solitaire or something on his phone or some sort of he was playing some sort of game on his phone during the Senate. Someone caught him on his iPhone. I would if I were people on C-SPAN right now, that's what I would be doing. I would be like looking for shots of the galleys to see who's playing Pokemon Go while sitting in Congress.
Whose fingers are going up regularly. Yeah. Exactly. On their phones.
And of course, John Ledger immediately jumping on this and zero rating Pokemon Go. If you're a T-Mobile customer, you get free Pokemon Go data for a year. It doesn't use that much data, I would guess.
No, it doesn't.
And you have to do their crazy Tuesday app to get it, too. It's like, if it's not even that much data, just make it for all the subscribers. Come on.
Yeah, really? Come on.
They really want people to download the app. Come on.
What do I have to download an app? The Tuesday, the what's it called?
Yeah.
T-Mobile Tuesdays.
Yeah, they've got like a deals app, so you've got to download that and then on
The T-Mobile Tuesdays app, exactly.
Yeah, so then you can claim the free data thing. You've got until August 9th, I think, to claim the free data for Pokemon Go for a year. And like Tom's saying, like it uses like 10 or 20 megabytes an hour or something.
I checked, so, and yeah, it wasn't too bad. Yeah.
So for most users, I think are probably fine, but give it to John Legere and T-Mobile for finding a hot trend and capitalizing on it.
By the way, who do they have introducing T-Mobile Tuesday? DJ Khaled.
Oh, yeah.
So they, you know, he knows. He really knows. John knows how to jump on every gosh darn trend there is.
Free data alert.
Hey, it's DJ Khaled, and I just wanted to tell you.
Don't play yourself, Leo.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my gosh. That he's a Snapchat star mainly, yes. Right? Yeah. I still don't get it, but I free stuff and epic prizes this Tuesday and another one just for being you. I love that. Tuesday's the new Saturday, and Saturday's still itself. Bless all. Get the T-Mobile Tuesdays app and get the. See, I really sometimes I feel like I feel kind of disoriented. I guess I understand how non-Pokemon Go players feel. I feel like the world has left me behind. And I look at DJ Khaled and I go, Khalid or whatever, and I go...
Khaled.
And I go, I think my time here is almost over.
Do you follow him on Snapchat?
I do.
Well, and there you go.
That's even more baffling. It's like, what the what? What am I seeing here?
Secure your bag. Bless up. Good.
I just think, you know, my time is almost over, and I don't understand the world anymore. I guess that's what happens. When you get to a certain age, I now understand it. When you get to a certain age, you just look at the world and you go, yeah, I guess it's over for me. I'm no longer understand anything.
You just need to get DJ Khaled to swing by the Twit Studios and
explain
do some Mogul Talk with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Explain it all to me.
Go do some Major Keys with you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I like that.
So you guys are all in the DJ Khaled group here. You understand it, right? Because you're young people.
I think I'm borderline in that case, so I don't know. Yeah. I'm mildly confused.
I met him at the Beyonce concert and did take a selfie with him. It was one of those things. Usually when I like am in the vicinity of like famous people, I'm not a fangirl and I'm not like take a selfie with me. But I figured like if I was in a suite with DJ Khaled, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna walk up to you and get a selfie. He looked up from his phone for about 2 seconds. We got the selfie, went straight back to the phone.
Is he jaded? He's
and
jaded.
Love.
Bless you. Bless us. Bless all. Whatever.
Bless up.
Bless up.
Yeah.
I don't know the lingo.
We the best, Leo.
Last time you were on, you did Taylor Swift lyrics. How do you stay so young, Tom Merritt?
Eileen. My wife introduces me to all that stuff.
Well, she has to. She's at the YouTube facility down there in L.A.
She's got the pipeline.
They're all in there. They're all, she's seeing them all. She's learning it. All right, let's take a break. Tom Merritt's here from the Daily Tech News Show. Great to have you, Tom, once again. Glad to see the fireplace is still there.
Yeah, it's still up.
Still intact. How's the dog?
Dogs are great.
Good. Dogs.
Doing well.
Okay, good. And Eileen, of course. Miss her. Great
she's
to
doing
see
great,
you
too.
From Mashable, the wonderful Christina Warren. She's film girl on the Twitter, film_girl. And the Twitter's still happening, or is Pokemon Go going to supersede Twitter? It's all over now,
I mean,
right?
I think I mean, we are just in a Pokemon Go universe. And so to my great displeasure, my Pokemon Go name is not film underscore girl because they don't allow underscores. So I'm Christina Mon. So it's a whole new brand for me. So I'm starting over.
I'm sorry. What'd you say? I have to get this rat tata. I'm Chief Twit. What's your handle, Tom?
It's Ace Detect as usual.
Good. You got it. Yeah. And Tim, have you come up with a clever handle for your Pokemon Go?
I'm Zap Rousedower because I'm a Mystery Science Theater 3000 nerd.
I like that.
I love that.
Good job.
I like that.
I don't even know how to spell it, but I like it. Wow. It doesn't matter at this point because you can't communicate, although there's all sorts of rumors. They're going to put messaging in, all sorts of different stuff.
Soon we'll be promoting our articles on Pokemon Go.
Yeah. Pokemon Go instant articles. Ah!
God, it's going to be a thing.
Well, actually, when we come back, I want to take a break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about, the news now no longer belongs to traditional media. It belongs to Twitter and Facebook. And we got a Republican convention coming up starting tomorrow. And I have a feeling Facebook's going to be a pretty big player in this. Twitter wants to be, too. We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte and This Week in Tech, our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix, who do GoToMeeting. Oh, man, I love GoToMeeting. It's the best way to step up your meeting game, take your meetings to the next level. If you're in business, you're going to be doing the conference calls. You're going to be doing the meetings. The best way to start a conference call, GoToMeeting. You can do the conference call, but then should it happen that you want to share a screen, show a PowerPoint, collaborate on a document, it's right there. You turn on your camera. Suddenly you're seeing the people you're meeting with. You could be a meeting MVP. It's like you're right there. No matter where your clients or colleagues are, anywhere in the world, it's easy. You could start a meeting with one click with the GoToMeeting software. If you're using Outlook, for instance, you go click, you send out the invites, the meeting is ready. It's so easy. You can even do it, though, from not just from a desktop, from your mobile device. You can even hold a meeting on your iPad, for instance. Use your webcam to see your colleagues in HD. Share your screen to get on the same page. Pass off presenter duties with ease. You can even send private chats and video links. Hey, I just got a Pidgey. GoToMeeting. It'd be kind of fun, actually, to do a Pokemon Go. It looks like they're doing it right there. Pokemon Go, GoToMeeting. Yeah. That's a Pokeball. Now's the time to put on your best performance, be the next meeting MVP, and start it free at GoToMeeting.com right now. Just click the Try It Free button, GOTO Meeting. GoToMeeting.com. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. I was watching, it seems like every day, a new, fresh, bad news story. This morning, get up, watching CNN. Police shooting in Baton Rouge. First thing you see, vertical video from Facebook Live. It was a trending topic on Facebook Live practically before it was on TV. And Facebook Live was a big part of last week's news. Watching the Turkish coup or whatever happened in Turkey, because it seems unclear at this point. Prime Minister, President Erdogan uses FaceTime. FaceTime. And then, of course, the coup plotters, as always, first thing you do, you shut down the TV and radio and now Facebook and Twitter, although they didn't do it completely. And as a result, lots of video coming to the rest of the world of what was going on in Turkey. Whether it was a real coup or a fake coup. I don't know what the question here is. I guess, is this a kind of a partnership between old media and new media, or is new media going to eventually just supersede old? Is CNN out of luck here? Is NBC, CBS, the conventions are coming up this week. Are people going to be watching on Twitter?
I mean, Twitter hopes so.
Yeah. And BitTorrent hopes they'll be watching on BTN, and Twitch hopes they'll be watching on Twitch. And
Twitch is like, doing the yeah. Republican convention?
They're going to carry streams of the Republican and Democratic conventions.
Wow. But now, in the case of Twitter, the stream's coming from mainstream media. It's
coming from CBS.
Yeah. CBS.
Yeah.
How about Twitch? Where is it coming from?
You know, I don't know.
Maybe
I don't know what their source is.
They're owned by Amazon. Maybe Amazon's got a network.
Washington Post TV. No.
Washington Post TV, right.
No, but I think that it's partnerships for now, because obviously, you know, there are infrastructures that exist on both sides that don't exist on the other. So you have the technology infrastructure if you're a Facebook or a Twitter and you have the media reach and the cameras and the talent, if you're some of these other the switchers, if you're some of these other places. So I think it benefits everybody if they're kind of working together. But I mean, to Tom's point, I mean, all kinds of companies are trying to get the eyeballs. And that's certainly not a good thing if you're the more traditional CNN of the world. Although I think CNN is probably shifting the way that it counts its ratings and its impressions for things and says, okay, if we can get people watching on our Facebook live stream, or if we can get people watching, you know, through an app or through another source, then we'll count that towards our total impressions that we sell versus just however many people are tuning in to the traditional broadcast feed.
Well, you're our canary in the coal mine, Christina. How are you going to be watching? With Twitter by your side, on a television?
Twitter, probably, Facebook. And that's been the case the last, you know, a little while is been, you know, the last election, we saw this a lot too, where you finally saw the older media partnering with the debates with YouTube and Twitter and Facebook. And now we're seeing more and more of that. And obviously now we have the live video component that we didn't really have with those infrastructures before, where you can really both with broadcast and consume the stuff that way. So, but yeah, I mean, I anticipate I'll be watching a lot of the speeches through Twitter or through Facebook. You know, we have TVs in our office at Mashable that are tuned in to the different news networks. But I think most of us, it's just easier to consume it on the screens that we're already tuned into. And so, and I think I'm not alone in that. I think a lot of people, when they get home or if they're at the office or something else, it's just easier, you know, if they have it pulled up in Facebook that they're already browsing anyway. Why not just have the video stream going there?
One thing that this does is it kind of disconnects the content from its source. So, for instance, this morning, I wanted to see Trump's speech about his vice presidential choice. And there was video. I can't, you know, I was probably reading a news feed or, you know, maybe Tech Meme or something. There was maybe Nuzzle. And there was video and I clicked it. And then I'm watching the video. I don't know where it came from. I'm watching the video of the speech. And I thought, oh, I would like to Chromecast this because I want to see it on the big screen. And there was no button. I realized, oh, this isn't YouTube. This is Facebook. I'm watching Facebook video now. But it disconnects. You don't know where you saw it. So what's the benefit to Facebook if I'm not viewing it on Facebook, if it's embedded? What's the benefit? They're not putting
ads in. Right now, it's just uptake. They just want people to use the platform. But eventually, they'll figure out how to monetize that. And then they already are doing it in small ways to begin with.
Do they need to be more subtle than traditional media? Traditional media will say, oh, we'll be back after this word from our sponsor. YouTube kind of has this middle ground where they just slide up a banner. Those are kind of annoying. And then unless you have YouTube Red, or are they going to get more subtle? I mean, how do you monetize if you're Facebook? How do you monetize this? Especially if it's not on the page. I understand.
Yes, Facebook would like you to answer that question as well.
Yeah. I understand if it's on Facebook.com, you're going to monetize it because you get the ads on the side. But I noticed this is embedded video. I was reading somebody else's site.
That's part of the calculation, I think, is even if you're not always watching it on Facebook, if enough people are using it, that's bringing people to Facebook.
I guess.
Yeah, and they're probably grabbing some demographic information from the embed anyway. You know, there's probably some ad code shared where they can get some information about at least the location and maybe something from your browser cookie that can add to their demographic information for those sidebar ads that you'll see. But I mean, I think that the short answer, and Tom would know better than I would, but I think obviously there's, you know, pre-roll would be an easy thing for them to do. But once it comes to embeds that are already happening on the stream, I don't know if they want to do the YouTube route of doing, you know, the pop under, you know, and kind of overlay or what. I think right now, though, they're just trying to get as many people watching as possible. And they'll worry about making money off of the video component later, because that's going to be there. That opportunity will be there for them. I think that the big thing that they just want as many people as possible using their platform to broadcast, because that really helps showing, hey, we've got people who are using their phones and are capturing these major events, whether they're positive or negative, using Facebook Live. That's a really big thing. And then the secondary thing is just whether they're watching it embedded in a stream on a web page or if they're on Facebook.com.
We used to say that the advantage Google had is as long as you use the internet more, they would make money. It was an easy thing for them. You can't really say that about Facebook. You can't just say as long as you use the internet more, Facebook will make money. Or can you? Maybe because
you could say as long as you use Facebook will make money. And because Facebook is trying to make itself the internet.
It is the internet.
They are.
Yeah. For a lot of people, that's probably true.
I looked it up. Twitch doesn't actually say exactly where the streams are coming from, but they say they're partnering with the parties. So I assume it's right. just like a pool feed that the parties right. provide from the conventions. Ah. And they're saying they're doing it as a public service. So it ties into what we're saying here, which is Twitch is just doing it to bring eyeballs and say, hey, maybe just use our platform. And the other interesting thing is they're letting you as a Twitch user rebroadcast that with your own commentary and streams Ooh. On your Twitch channel.
Okay, now that's actually interesting because yeah. then that takes the pool feed concept, which has obviously been around for a long time, and that truly does democratize it. Because before you added that part, Tom, I didn't really understand why Twitch would care, because I would think the typical Twitch audience isn't going to be as engaged with the party conventions as maybe some other things. But if you can add in that commentary factor, that's very interesting, and that's really smart on their part. I wonder how many people will use it, but that's really smart.
So I'm wondering too. I mean, it's one thing to be able to restream these things. I think that's great. But do people really want political commentary from professional gamers and their celebrities that they follow?
But it doesn't have to be. We're on Twitch. It doesn't have to be professional gamers. Twitch is now, at first when they started, they said, oh, you're going to have to be gaming content. They've stopped that now. They can be any kind of content.
They're opening it up to a lot of different creative types.
I'd be really curious. You know, who's on the beach? What journalist is on the beach? If you were, when Brian Williams, for instance, was in purgatory, wouldn't it be interesting if he went to Twitch and said, I'm going to do the Brian Williams commentary? Maybe nobody would watch it. I don't know. But it would be it's a way to kind of end around the networks.
And I think that's one of the big things that would be missing from live streams on Twitter or from Facebook or elsewhere. You know, it's one thing to sit there and watch C-SPAN, but ultimately it's not going to be a very informative thing if you've never watched these conventions before. And certainly not everyone's going to be able to sit there all day and watch the whole thing anyway. That's what CNN and everybody else brings to the table. They have the analysis, they have roundups, they bring out the important parts and talk them up. You know, unless you're able to watch all day long and you've watched them before, you won't necessarily be able to pick those things out. So I think that's the big advantage for the news networks at this point. But yeah, as we see people being able to rebroadcast these things and cut them up and put together their own highlights, that really does bring the democratization to another level for an event like this. And it will be interesting to see what comes out of it.
Tim, what are you going to do if you wanted to watch the Republican convention? You have a lot of choices now.
Right. I've actually been, not to be too patriotic to my own corporation here, but I've been enjoying CBSN, our local streaming news network.
I actually love that.
It all the time. And
I
actually have, actual news commentary and actual people who I trust and respect on there. But if I just want to tune in and see what's going on, I'll probably check out Twitter or somewhere else just to get the live stream. But just to get what's going on in the news and to watch live events as they're happening. I've been using CBSN, quite a bit.
I have a feeling. I hope I'm wrong, but I have a feeling there will be a lot going on this week. And maybe even some crazy stuff going on. I'm very worried because you've got open carry in Cleveland. You can't bring a squirt gun to a protest, but it turns out a long gun, no problem. And I'm really worried about what's going to happen. Who knows what's going to happen in the convention hall? I think there's going to be a lot of news coming out of there. And so it'll be very interesting to see what choices people make. I feel like we're reaching a tipping point. This last 3 weeks, we've really seen a very rapid migration to alternative sources for your content.
Yeah, the Saturday morning, I never turned on a video stream. I essentially consumed the news about the vice presidential announcement on Twitter. And I didn't need to have the stream on. I watched the video later, but I was getting all different sides, supporters and antagonists giving their opinions as it happened. And I felt like I had a richer experience just that way. Other times I go to Sling TV, I turn on BBC World News because that gives a non-US centric opinion. The CNN's on there as well. Facebook Live was great when the problems were happening in Istanbul and Ankara over the weekend because you had all these Facebook Live videos coming out of Turkey because they've shut down Facebook so many times in the country. People know how to get around it with VPNs, et cetera. It's fascinating the wealth of choices you have to keep up on an event that we've never had before in history.
And of course, if you follow it on social media, then you get all the great animated gifs to go along with it. And that's really what it's all about.
And in some ways, that might not be bad. I mean, I almost feel like you're at a control center where You know, I'm thinking when I was six when President Kennedy was shot, and there was this kind of unity. The whole nation was watching the same thing, storekeepers had put speakers in their windows. So I remember walking down Main Street. I was in Providence, Rhode Island at the time. And you never were outside the radio audio after those few days. And events happened very rapidly. But you were never kind of, it was the first time you were in the bubble all the time. But we all experienced all the same thing. Now you can remix the news at will. And you kind of do, don't you? You're doing mashups as you go.
And it took back then a Kennedy assassin level event.
Absolutely.
To make everyone pay attention at the same time and talk about it. But what happens now is, it almost to the negative, every event can get that level of coverage. But I think the positive side of it is that everyone can talk to each other about it, not just whoever you happen to be around at the time.
Well, I do feel like events are accelerating, and right now, something's happening, and it's not just Pokemon Go. Right now, something is happening, and it's happening in the way we see the world around us. And maybe, I don't know, is it just we geeks who are spending a lot of time sitting in front of screens? I think it's everybody.
No, I think it's everyone, because we've seen it from all types of people who are broadcasting this stuff and who are reporting on the news and all parts of the world. You know, I think this is just the reality.
Yeah, I think Christina's right. We all have phones now.
Yeah, that's right. That's the difference, isn't it? We are all on screens. Everybody, not just geeks. Everybody is on screens at all times. Well, just, I was looking at a New York Times headline from Wednesday. It said, you know, another night, another shooting on Facebook Live. And that was Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And when they wrote that headline, they probably didn't think, oh, and then there would be Thursday and Friday and Saturday, too. Mm-hmm. And Sunday, as it turns out. I just feel like events are snowballing and these forms of coverage are snowballing. And it's very interesting, by the way, that although they tried to shut down social media in Turkey, they could not do it effectively. And so as a result, everybody kind of knew what was going on. And Erdogan was able to say to the people, go out on the streets and show your support.
Well, because Erdogan has shut down social networking so often, people have learned how to get around.
They figured it out. But that gives me hope for all of the world. You know, Putin last week announced even more draconian measures, effectively banning encryption in Russia. I have hope for the whole thing, that the people have figured this out and they will get around it. And this technology will, in the long run, win.
How do you think we're going to have to somehow recalibrate ourselves? Because we're not used to seeing these events as up close and personal. You know, there's always been some barrier, some buffer, you know, someone saying shocking footage ahead, you may want to tune out, that kind of thing. That barrier is gone now. And so these sorts of things are, you know, they're in your Twitter feed, they're in your Facebook feed, they're in your face all the time. And we're not really used to seeing these things. We're not used to not being able to avoid seeing these things, I guess. And I think that's something that we as a society are going to have to deal with and have to adapt to somehow. And I'm not sure what the solution is, or even if there is a solution, if we'll just become a bit more jaded about these things, which would be unfortunate. But ultimately, you know, we've never had this kind of exposure and this kind of insight into these terrible events as we've had over the past few weeks. And that, I think, is definitely, changing our perspectives on the world at large.
We talked about this last week on Twit, because we had Siva Sadyanathan and Jeff Jarvis, both media critics, media journalism professors, that during Vietnam, the networks very consciously edited out bloodshed. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we got a kind of a sanitized picture of the war. Same thing really happened in the first Iraq War. It was very sanitized. We saw the shock and awe from a distance, but we didn't see the bloodshed. I think that's changed now, and you're seeing the bloodshed, and it's shocking. You might be right. We may not be ready for this. There's nobody intermediating now.
Well, I mean, it kind of, you know, if you've ever seen the classic film Network, you know, like at a certain point where, you know, one of the subjects of that film, which was when it was done in the 70s, a satire on the media industry. And now, of course, it just looks like a predictor.
Paddy Chayefsky, who was a great media critic of the time.
Yes, yeah. Precisely. It, you know, was the whole thing of like having a coup staged and murder happening on live television. And now that's actually things that are happening.
It's actually happening. Yeah,
it's actually happening. Network has become, I mean, 10 years ago, you know, that was something you could say and point to things happening. But now it literally is happening.
And you don't have to throw open the window and say, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. You just go to Twitter, because that's where everybody's doing it. Everybody on Twitter is mad as hell.
Or you open up a Facebook Live. You know, right. but these things are being broadcast in real time and without anybody wanting to censor it. And so it's becoming, whether or not we're ready to see it or not, I think is a very interesting question, but it's happening.
I may be wrong, but it just feels like there is a significant difference to what's going to been happening the last couple of weeks and what's going to happen next week and what's going to happen through November in this country than anything we've seen before. And I don't know what the impact, societal impact of it is, the personal impact of it is. Clearly, it has a personal impact. I mean, I think we are more gutted by the things that have happened in the last 2 weeks than we would have been if we hadn't seen them unintermediated, seen them directly. That really hit home, didn't it?
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think for good or ill, you can't ignore things by just reading about them in the newspaper. People are shot and killed every day by policemen, and policemen are killed not every day, but regularly by citizens, but they show up as numbers in a column. And so now you actually see what happens, and it forces people to pay attention to that. And if you think back, you're talking about in the 60s, the civil rights protests and the water guns being shown on television was brand new. Yeah. Instead of just hearing about something and reading it in the newspaper, you could see it. And this is the evolution of that.
Yeah. YouTube. So another thing that happened is the networks stopped doing gavel-to-gavel coverage of the conventions. When I was a kid, you could literally sit in front of the TV from the first gavel to the last gavel and watch everything. I even remember in contested conventions writing down the votes and keeping track of it and all this stuff because I was some sort of weird nerd. but then the network stopped doing that, right? And then they did a wrap-up with a half-hour newscast. Well, we're back to gavel-to-gavel. In fact, we're back to immersive gavel-to-gavel. If you want to wear a Gear VR all night, you can. YouTube's going to stream the conventions in 360-degree video.
It's interesting because I do wonder how many people will actually tune in for that. I have a feeling it's a very small number, you know.
Well, you don't want to do it for long. I watched one of the debates.
Yeah, I did that too. Way. It's and not it a was, good experience.
Yeah, it's kind of nauseating, actually. And I don't know if it was the debate or the
battery didn't last very long. Like, the battery didn't even last the entire debate, as I recall. I had to, like, stop, like, three-quarters of the way through because,
I saw stuff that I wouldn't have seen because one of the cameras was, like, as people were coming on stage and you would see, and it was very telling, the candidates gear up for their introduction on stage. It's kind of a personal moment. They probably weren't aware of these 360-degree cameras. They're small and didn't realize that people were watching them. I think that there's a potential here to kind of pierce the image making and see what's really going on.
It's the learning step, right? You put those cameras in to see what happens and what doesn't work so that you can figure out what are the things that these are good for. And that's one of the things they're good for,
They're also, YouTube's also going to have people like the Young Turks, Complex News, Seeker Daily, Ingrid Nielsen, Mark Watson, Julie Borowski. Those are names you may not know, but they are, and I don't know many of them, but they're YouTube stars who will be participating in YouTube's coverage. So this is a chance for a new generation of media stars to participate in what was traditionally, you know, the realm of Huntley, Brinkley, and Walter Cronkite.
And I'm curious to see what their reactions are to these things. I mean, as you mentioned, those are great journalists that you just named, and they've obviously got a lot of extensive training and being not biased and ultimately, you know, shooting straight effectively. This new generation of YouTube stars, they obviously have a great following and hopefully they can bring a positive message to it all. But I'm definitely very curious to see what that message is that they bring to the coverage.
Buy my makeup,
you know,
kit.
How straight they can shoot, I guess.
Right. Well, but it doesn't matter anymore, right? First of all, that was an illusion that there was objectivity.
Sure.
I mean, there was an attempt at objectivity. Now it's like, no, there's no attempt at all. It's advocacy all the way down.
So it would be interesting to see if somebody could do an attempt at responsible coverage, right? Objectivity is something none of us can achieve 100%. Right. But that was what the broadcasters did try to do is attempt objectivity and at least have responsible coverage.
Boy, an opportunity for somebody, right? Somebody really smart, you know. Boy, that would be interesting. Somebody like who's the 538 guy, Nathan Silver.
Yeah.
To do something really smart and different. Who could do that?
And get Silver and Christopher Buckley together.
I'd love that. Wouldn't you watch Nate Silver and Christopher Buckley doing gavel to gavel convention coverage? I'd love that. So here's an opportunity, instead of doing the same old thing, to do something really new and different and find an audience. And that's the other thing that's changed, is you don't need 18 million people. We've shown that with Twit. You can have a niche audience and do fine. Let 100 niches bloom.
Yeah, man. I have way fewer people than Twit.
And you're doing fine, right?
I'm doing okay, yeah.
You're making a living thanks to Patreon and the tools. And, you know, and you've got tools to disseminate and YouTube. And you can do this in your living room and do great.
Absolutely.
I think that's, to me, that's very encouraging. You know, that's kind of the promise of all of this. But we'll see. I mean, often the promise doesn't deliver when it comes to things like national news stories. Taking a break. Come back with more. Tom Merritt, Daily Tech News Show. You should do your gavel-to-gavel coverage next week.
I've got a gavel back
there. You do. I see it. DTNS.com, DailyTechHeadlines.com for the short version, short audio version every morning. From Mashable, it's Tech Film Girl, Mashable's Christina Warren. Do you do, you need a Christina's Corner thing?
I do.
Where do you do that? Do you do that, anything like that?
I mean, the closest thing I come to that is I do a podcast called Rocket, where we talk about tech, but I don't have my own thing. I should probably.
But you see,
start,
I mean, you look at what Tom's done. It's really great because you build a brand, you build a name. It should be your name. It should be you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just saying. I'm just saying. Tim Stevens, he's got the Roadshow. I mean, theroadshow.com. That's really, I mean, I know it's become a big enterprise now. You get all these people all over the world, Detroit, and San Francisco. You're going to Paris for the big auto show next week or 2 weeks, right?
Just about a month, actually. Yes. Yeah. I'll be in Paris for that. And then we've got LA coming up not too long after that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm going to Tokyo too in at the end of, right after Paris, actually. So getting all over the place.
We were thinking we should do some coverage of the LA auto show. Is there one show that's more technical than others? Like more, I guess they're all technology nowadays.
Yeah, they definitely are. Both LA and Detroit are making a big push this year to be the kind of go-to automotive tech show. Mm-hmm. LA previously had the Connected Car Conference that led into the LA show. Now they've kind of consumed that into the show itself. But Detroit's making a big push this year. They're dedicating a lot of floor space to startups in the Detroit area and autonomous cars and that kind of thing, too. So it's going to be kind of a fight between the two. But the Detroit show is definitely the bigger of the two by far.
When we come back, we should talk about autonomous vehicles.
Yeah.
Consumer Reports told Tesla, you should stop saying that's a self-driving car. That's not the right message to send. Clearly not. We'll talk about that when we come back. A little more in just a bit. Tom Merritt, Christina Warren, Tim Stevens, This Week in Tech. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. Gazelle, August 2nd, we're going to see, we think, the new Galaxy Note, probably called the Note 7. There's new phones still coming. I just got a new Huawei phone or ZTE. I can't remember. Some Chinese phone. The Axon. Who is that? Huawei GTE? Anyway, $400 phone. I've ordered that. The OnePlus 3. You got iPhone. I mean, this is, if you're sitting there with the same old phone, it might be time to see how much you can get for it from Gazelle so you can buy up to something new and cool. Gazelle lets you trade in your old device for cash or buy a certified pre-owned one or do both to buy or sell. It's Gazelle. Gazelle's great because they will give you a 30-day quote for your device. In fact, why make it just one device? As long as you're there, get quotes for everything. You know, you got stuff piled up in a drawer, right? You wouldn't throw $100 bills in a drawer and just let them catch dust. That's what you're doing. if you're just throwing your stuff in the drawer, here's your chance to get cash or a check. You know, you can get a check or a PayPal credit or an Amazon gift card. Man, that would have been good for last week for Prime Day. We'll talk about that too in a little bit. Gazelle.com, top dollar for your old device. And then the best stuff, they run through their rigorous 30-point inspection and they sell it. If you want to get a great deal on a gently used iPhone 6S or 6S Plus on an iPad and a Galaxy phone, Gazelle's the place to go. Each device, oh, looks like they're selling the MacBooks now too. That's nice. Gazelle's the place to go. And they do that rigorous 30-point check. You also have a 30-day return policy. There's no, when you sell a phone, there's no carrier contract, but they do work on all the major carriers in the U.S., AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and Sprint. And when you're at Gazelle, you can now get financing, too. In fact, you could do it. It's so easy. You could do it at checkout. Just as you're checking out, check, say, I wanted financing by a firm. You give them some simple information. They can instantly approve you. They also offer 12-month warranties now on cell phones and iPads powered by Assurant Solutions. They cover not just defects, hardware defects, but water damage, cracked screens. Gazelle. It's great. Go to gazelle.com. Back to school time's coming. I can't. Is it already back to school time? Holy cow. Boy, that comes fast. Summer's shorter than ever. Now's the time maybe to get some back to school devices. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. To buy, to sell, give new life to used electronics, trade in for cash, or buy certified pre-owned at gazelle.com. Today, Consumer Reports says, hey, Tesla, knock it off. What are they complaining about, Tim Stevens?
They're complaining about a lot of things, actually. This letter
isn't
that
it Consumer Reports that said the Tesla was the best, the Model S was the best car they'd ever tested, ever in the history.
Yeah, and that's one of the many reasons that I have a lot of issues with this Consumer Reports open letter. Consumer Reports first said that the Model S was the best car. It was so good that it broke their scoring system.
Right.
And they actually gave it two slots in their top five best cars of I think it was 2015. That's how much they were in love with the Model S. And less than 3 months later, they said, yeah, actually, you know what? We don't recommend the car after all because of the reliability concerns that a lot of people
had. Not even knock it down a point, but don't recommend it.
Right. It went from the top two cars, again, the Model S had two slots in their top five, to being not recommended, even though in that first recommendation they said, you know, we've heard some concerns about reliability, but we don't care, it's such a great car. Then they turned around and said, you know what, the reliability is worse than we thought, so we're not going to recommend it after all.
Is it really and that bad, by the way? Because I'm about to get a Model X.
It is definitely. I would get the extended warranty. Yeah, there are a lot of people getting battery packs swapped. We've heard the suspension issues as well. There are definitely concerns about reliability for sure. I don't think it's honestly, horribly bad, but there are definitely concerns, and a lot of people are going through multiple battery packs in their cars, which thankfully are covered by a very generous warranty.
Well, it's also, I'm told, a very expensive car to repair, right?
It is, yeah. I mean, there are a few components, which is good. So maintenance is a lot easier. You don't have to worry about oil changes or brakes last a lot longer. So in terms of the cost of running overall, it's probably not that much different from a normal car. But, you know, the componentry that's in the car is, of course, very specialized. So it's not like you can go down to a local Napa and get some new inductor coils or that kind of thing for your car. It's a very specialized thing. And indeed, Tesla makes it very difficult to work on it yourself. So everything pretty much has to go back to the Tesla. Right. Mechanics, which definitely adds some cost to the game.
So there have been two or three autopilot crashes, probably just two, because now Tesla's saying what was initially billed as an autopilot crash wasn't. Because Tesla has the telemetry, they said, no, the autopilot was not turned on. But the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is investigating. Security Exchange Commission investigating some sale of stock issues. And Consumer Reports now writes the letter, quote, this is Laura McCleary, Vice President of Consumer Policy and Mobilization for Consumer Reports. Quote, by marketing their feature as autopilot, Tesla gives customers a false sense of security. In the long run, advanced safety technologies in vehicles could make our roads safer. But today, we're deeply concerned that consumers are being sold a pile of promises about unproven technology. Autopilot can't actually drive the car.
Right.
But it does allow consumers to have their hands off the steering wheel for minutes at a time.
I think the most important thing here is that autopilot in a plane does not fully control the plane. In fact, autopilot in a plane is in a lot of ways very similar to the autopilot system that Tesla offers. Autopilot system will not take the plane, will not taxi down the runway, will not take the plane off the runway for you. It will control the plane and maintain a heading, and it will maintain a course for you. And indeed, autopilot systems will land the plane for you in many cases as well. But it's not the kind of thing where a pilot would turn on autopilot and go take a nap or go play Go or watch a movie or that kind of thing. Well, there are specific regulations that the FAA has in place about when you can use it, when you should not use it, and a lot of recommendations about using autopilot to effectively reduce the workload of the pilot so they can be paying more attention to things like traffic in the air, inclement weather conditions, and that kind of thing. But ultimately, the system that autopilot has in planes is not as comprehensive as what most people think. And I think that's where this disconnect is. Tesla is saying it's like autopilot in planes, and people think, oh, well, autopilot flies the plane for you. You don't have to do anything. That, I think, is where the big disconnect here is.
Well, but I'm not sure Consumer Reports is wrong, because, of course, if you're a pilot, a commercial pilot, you're highly trained and know exactly what autopilot will and will not do and what your responsibilities are. But Tesla drivers, you know, they just have a driver's license. They've probably never driven a car with these features. By using the word autopilot, you know, as a pilot, and pilots know that's not what we think it is, but can you expect the guy off the street to know what that means?
Right, and I think that's the big disconnect. But certainly when you enable that system in the car, it tells you exactly what it does and does not do.
Right, it's pretty clear, right?
And it's attention.
You have to turn it on. It isn't on by default.
There's a little bit of EULA fatigue there, though.
Yeah.
I mean, people get excited about autopilot, and they think that means it will drive the car for you, even though that's not what Tesla said.
Right.
And so they treat it as if it will. And I think that's what Consumer Reports is reacting to. In my opinion, they're overreacting to it. I think Consumer Reports has the right to change their mind and say, now that we've seen that the reliability concerns are true, we're going to adjust it. It seems like they're going from one extreme to another, though.
They say that Tesla should disable automatic steering in the cars until it updates the program. Actually, what they're really saying is add the feature that says driver's hands must be on the wheel for this to work. Right now, what is it, Tim? You can take it off for a minute or two, but eventually it vibrates and buzzes and then slows down.
Right. It's somewhere between 2 and 4 minutes usually. I don't think there's a set time that Tesla has stated, but certainly it's definitely more generous than we've seen in other manufacturers. But one of the points that I wrote a big editorial about this because it kind of made me upset. But one of the points is we've had cruise control forever. In fact, the first generation of cruise control was called autopilot, ironically enough.
Really?
And we've had people who were doing things, you know, we've seen controversies in the past where people have done stupid things with cruise control on. But there's no regulation about having to have your feet on the gas and the brake pedal ready to take over. You know, you can be paying attention and you can be alert in the car without having your hands resting on the steering wheel at all times. I don't think that is necessarily the crux of the problem. I think the problem is that ultimately a lot of local news stations in particular have been misrepresenting what this system is. I did a 2-second Google search and came up with 10 different local news reports talking about the Tesla Model S being a self-driving car, even one that called it a driverless car, which is completely outrageous.
Yeah, but wait a minute. But Musk kind of encouraged that perception by saying things like, soon you'll be able to get the car to come to you from across the country.
I don't know that he said that. He did say you can drive from Seattle to San Francisco with your hands off the wheel, which I thought was definitely
inappropriate.
He's definitely played up from a branding perspective that people can trust this thing a lot. And I think that although I agree that the Consumer Reports is overreacting, I do understand where they're coming from in the sense that I think so many people buy this car. They buy into they're hardcore Tesla fans. You know, you've got to be on a waiting list to get the car. You get the car. You like the technology. It works really well. It works better than anything we've seen before. And you trust it. So you are willing to give it more responsibility than maybe you should. And I think that there is something to be said about the fact that the branding that Tesla's done might be too good and is leading some users to think that they can not be as alert as they are when they're in these, you know, these partially autonomous systems.
Tim, is there any car out there right now that does steering?
There are two other cars on the market that have very similar systems, the Mercedes-Benz E-Class and the Volvo S90, both of which are very new on the market. In fact, I don't think the S90 has come to the U.S. just yet. They both have the same basic functionality. They'll steer around corners and speed up and slow down, of course, and change lanes for you, too. Both of them, though, have much shorter restrictions in terms of how long you can take your hands off the wheel. I don't know exactly what the time is, but it's less than a minute, I believe, for both of them.
Interesting. But you can take your hands off the wheel.
Yeah, and then Volvo's got their Drive Me pilot system coming to Sweden next year. That's going to be a very limited number of cars, I think about 100 cars. But that'll be a fully autonomous car on the highway that you will be able to, you will at that point be able to take out a book and take a nap if you want to. That will be a fully autonomous car. But again, not until next year, and it's only going to be about 100 so far.
I think one of the biggest problems here is what some people are calling ambiguous role allocation. When the car doesn't entirely drive itself, but you're not also entirely driving the car,
right. Who's in charge?
It does slow your reaction time. There was a University of Strasbourg study in 2013 that found with cruise control, episodes of drowsiness increased 25%, and reaction time to emergencies was lengthened by 1 second. Now, I agree with Tim. I don't think that means we need to ban cruise control, but I do think that we have to keep in mind that when we are using these assisted technologies, there is an extra responsibility on us to stay alert that things could happen, and we might be less likely to notice them right away if we're not constantly paying attention like we would if we're driving the car entirely ourselves.
I'm just not sure who should be doing the messaging here, because all of Tesla's messaging has been saying exactly what the system can do. Right. I don't think that they have gone out of their way to swat down every single mistaken report that says what this, that's kind of misled people into believing that these are self-driving cars. And I don't know that that's something that Tesla should have to do, because what would we be thinking about them if they were correcting every single news report that went out there? I mean, they'd have to have a staff of hundreds just to keep up with that. But I'm not sure what the solution is to get people more educated, because the manual says what it can do. All of Tesla's messaging says what it can do. But yet people are using the system incorrectly. And so I'm not sure what the solution is. But ultimately just disabling it and renaming it, I don't think that's going to fix the problem here.
And by the way, keeping your hands on the wheel doesn't mean you're paying attention.
Right.
Yeah. So this same problem that you referred to, Tom, is could occur even if you have your hands on the wheel.
Google, it's about attention.
Google talks about this with their self-driving cars. They don't want people. They take the steering wheel and the pedals out because it takes you too long to figure out what's going. You might say, "Oh gosh," but I need to take control. But you still have to kind of readjust yourself to be in the situation. And by that time, you're in trouble. So I think the way is to disambiguate it. Either the car's driving or you're driving, but there's no middle ground. You can't both drive.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're going to be stuck in that middle ground for a good couple of years anyway, right, as this technology evolves. I think the other big problem is that there's no way of knowing how many lives autopilot has saved, and I'm sure it's saved a couple of people's lives at this point. But there's no way to prove that. There's no way to know. Obviously, when a life is lost because the system failed, that's obviously very easy to tell, and it's obviously a very tragic situation. But for sure, these systems have saved lives. Even the emergency braking systems, there was a NHTSA study, I think, 2 years ago that showed if your car has emergency braking alone, you are 42% less likely to get involved in a rear-end collision that involves injuries. 42% just from this one system, and Tesla's got that system and a bunch of others. So I'm sure that there are fewer accidents happening and fewer serious accidents happening because of this system, but there's no way to prove that ultimately. And that, I think, is an unfortunate thing that there's just no answer for.
That's a really good difference from cruise control. Cruise control is not designed to avoid an accident. And so that ambiguous role allocation can be more dangerous than something which is a driver assistance that does, you know, lane detection and collision avoidance, which is actively trying to help you avoid getting into an accident.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a number of cars, including my current car, have adaptive cruise control, which is great in stop and go traffic.
Sure,
because
sure,
you can kind of just let the car maintain a safe stopping distance at any speed. And it will even come to a full stop if the car ahead of me stops. It's not as smooth a driver as I would be. It tends to jam the brakes on a little bit, which is a little scary. But it does the job, and I still would never, ever take my hand off the wheel or stop paying attention. Of course, it's not steering for me, but you clearly need to pay attention. I don't know. We'll see. I got the autopilot and the Tesla.
Yeah,
now I'm scared to turn it on.
It is a genuinely great service. If you're paying attention, it's just one less thing really that you need to worry about. Having that on the highway, you can really relax a bit more. Honestly, I think it makes me a safer driver because I can be looking around for incidents much more so rather than just worrying about staying between the lines, worrying about how fast I'm going, worrying about maintaining a safe gap between the car ahead of me if they're speeding up and slowing down. The car kind of takes care of all the menial stuff and frees me up to be looking for someone who's driving in an unsafe way or straight lights ahead, that kind of thing.
It should make you a better driver, not a worse driver.
Right.
On balance, it does.
If you use it as you're supposed to. But if you are using that as an opportunity to do something you shouldn't be doing, then obviously it can cause a lot of problems.
Leo, don't worry. Turn it on. Just call it something different.
It's not autopilot. It's not a driver assist. If you say driver assist, that's really so. I'm a little bit on the side of Consumer Reports here. I think they're also a consumer advocacy group, and I think it's a good idea to say, "Hey, it's not all. Don't call it autopilot. That confuses people. Call it driver assist. That's a perfectly legitimate description.
But it doesn't have the same branding, kind of.
Well, you can't have it both ways. Yes, I agree.
You're not wrong. I'm just saying I don't see Tesla changing their marketing that they've done so successfully.
Well, that's what their response is.
Because Consumer Reports wants them to. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think Consumer Reports wishes that they were that influential. They're sadly they're not. Yeah. Even though I think on the whole they're making good points. I don't know about pulling the entire recommendation for the car. That seems going a little bit far. I should note here, I'm not a driver. I don't have a driver's license, so I don't have a lot to add.
You're
to
lucky.
Or,
so lucky.
But you have a vested interest in these cars becoming entirely
self-driving. Not
hitting
you. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Without a doubt, I do. And then, but I kind of wonder from you guys, like, do you think that we can live in the kind of this middle ground world where we do have these systems that are partly autonomous and partly not? Because to me, that becomes the big question. Like, I don't really have a problem with a fully autonomous car on the road, because even though there will be crashes, I think that, the software will get better and things will probably be safer with more autonomous, fully autonomous cars on the road. But in this middle ground, I do have to be concerned with whether people really understand that they still have to be paying as much attention, if not more, versus just doing what I think a lot of people are going to do. I mean, I know a lot of my friends who drive who are already distracted when they're driving without any sort of autonomy and give them an excuse to not have their hands on the wheel. You're concerned. So I wonder, like, can we live in this middle ground world, or are we going to have to kind of wait for the fully autonomous cars to come?
I hope that we can. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Liam.
I talked to a Tesla owner today. He was in our studios visiting. He's such a Tesla fan. He's actually had some cards printed up that say Tesla evangelist, unofficial Tesla evangelist.
Wow.
But he said, because he often gets drowsy, and this was something that really scared me when I had a commute. I would get drowsy on the way home after the show, and I'd be tired, and I'd get drowsy. And I was so glad when I stopped driving, because I was really afraid I was going to die at some point by drifting off. He said, there is something to be said for the kind of, you shouldn't be taking naps at the wheel, but should you get drowsy, if you've got these services turned on, you're safer, right? You're less likely to have an accident due to inattention. You should pay attention. Of course, we know that. No one should drift off asleep. But these things might protect you if you, for a moment, momentarily lose focus.
And many of these cars can actually tell if you do fall asleep because they have infrared cameras that are watching you. So they will tell if you're getting drowsy, if you're not paying attention. And some of them even have retinal scan or retinal position detectors, basically, so they can tell exactly where you're looking.
Yeah.
And that's part of this handoff that's going to be put in place, which is uncomfortable as you're going from the car driving to driving the car, and needs to obviously make sure that you are paying attention before it'll give you control back if you do have a situation where the car can really drive itself. But these cars can really tell in a lot of ways your health situation. In fact, Ford's working on seats that will tell if you're having a heart attack, for example. Things like that, which are coming and which are encouraging, and I think will make driving safer. But ultimately, there are ways to exploit these autonomous systems. And as we've seen, we've all seen terrible YouTube videos of people in their Teslas playing board games or eating snacks or taking naps.
Yeah.
I hope that people will be responsible so they don't have to worry about some kind of draconian legislation that sets the whole world of autonomy back by 5 or 10 years. But ultimately, I think it's too early to tell. But I think this ties back to our conversation before about things getting more sensationalized and getting more coverage, I think, than they did before. If the news media sees these things and runs with them without getting all the facts right, as we've certainly seen in the case of the unfortunate death of, I think Joshua Brown was his name, who died in the Model S. There have been a lot of misreporting about that incident just because everyone wanted to cover the story of the first person who died in a quote-unquote self-driving car. And so if we have a lot of misrepresentation, if that gets momentum, that could definitely set things back. And that's really what I'm most concerned about here.
Yeah, we almost have zero data points, right, Leo?
Right.
Like, talking about something that has happened once. It doesn't really tell you one way or another whether it's dangerous or not.
One thing we know from watching this over and over again is technology disrupts the state. And during the period of disruption, whether it's cord cutting or self-driving, it's weird things. Bad things sometimes happen and weird things happen. It doesn't work very well. And this is, we're kind of in that, I think for the next decade, probably in that interregnum between driving yourself and having the car drive you, where it's going to be just weird. And that disconnect of who's in charge here. Mm-hmm. We're going to be putting up with that for a while. So people pay attention. don't trust the car. And this has been good for me. You know, we're in a lucky position. I think all of us are in a lucky position that we are not, we don't have the pressure to file every 5 minutes and generate a lot of traffic. We have the luxury of not having to sensationalize the news, of being able to sit back and say, well, let's find out what really happened. I feel fortunate that I don't have to be first on any of these stories because they change. And you know, maybe this new media landscape will help with that a little bit. We're going to take a break. I want to talk about Prime Day. Did you guys buy stuff at Prime Day, the 12th? Free.
I got a TV.
Let's hear about it in just a second. Wow. Nice. Our show today brought to you by My Mattress. A good night's sleep. God, it's so important. You are not going to have a good day if you did not get a good night's sleep. You're just not. It's just hard. You have to slog through the day and talk about being dangerous at the wheel. If you're sleepy driving, that's really bad. So get a good mattress. It will help you get a good night's sleep. And Casper is the mattress to get for a lot of reasons. Of course, it is a great mattress. It combines two technologies, latex foam and then supportive memory foam. So you get an award-winning sleep service with just the right surface, with just the right sink and just the right bounce. It's kind of hard to describe. You got to try it. 2016 Business Intelligence Group Innovation Award winner. It's summertime. It's hot. You will be very glad to know the Casper mattress sleeps cool. It breathes. And that's important. That's a very big part of having a good night's sleep. Comfort, coolness. But here's the best part. You can try it. You don't have to listen to me. You can try it. Now, that's not in a store. That's not how you try a mattress. Yeah, I know. That's how we used to do it. You go to a store, you line up for 5 minutes, getting the stink eye from the salesperson as you know, when you get your shoes on. You can't really see if this is a comfortable mattress. Can't tell you how many mattresses I bought and I've spent years on suffering with because I bought it in a store. No, the way you get the Casper is you order it right now. By the way, because you're buying direct from the factory, very affordable. Starts at $500 for a twin. Comes in that compact box, very easy to get in the door. And then you open up the box and whew, you got a mattress. Oh, you got a nice mattress. But try it. You have not one, not two, not 3 days. You have 100 nights. 100 nights. If at any time in those first 100 nights you say, yeah, I like my old mattress better, you just call Casper. They'll send a courier. They will take it away. They will refund you every penny. It will have cost you nothing. It is engineered, the Casper mattress, to meet the Goldilocks standard of not too hard, not too soft, but just right. Casper mattress is also made in the U.S., free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. You know, I was a little worried that when I opened the mattress, I'd have to air it out because it would smell, you know, like latex or something. No, it's great. Casper.com/twit. You could save an additional $50 towards a mattress purchase when you use the promo code twit at Casper, CASPER.com/twit. Terms and conditions apply. Casper.com/twit. Save $50 off the best mattress you've ever had or send it back. Really, really happy for my son. You know, he's in the dorm. They have terrible, disgusting mattresses. So I sent him a Casper, and he's third floors, but he was able to easily, you know, maybe he had, did it with a buddy, get the mattress up. I don't know how he's going to get it out. He probably just leave it there. I'm sure he left it there. Yeah, well, why not? He just left it there. Let's see here. Prime Day was July 12th. I looked at it. I didn't, you know, the problem with those sales like that, this is Amazon Prime customers only, is you tend to buy stuff you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, I looked at it. I thought, no, I'm not going to, did I miss out? What did you buy, Christina? A TV?
I got a TV. Yeah.
Whoa. Like a big one?
Yeah, 43-inch. It's not the one behind me. It will eventually replace the one behind me. I haven't put it up yet, but I got a 43-inch 4K TV for $300.
Whoa! Nice.
It's a Hisense. It's probably not the best TV, but frankly, it'll be good enough. It has a four-year warranty, four HDMI ports. The reviews were solid. It was like $100 off, and I was like, I kind of need a new TV. It's been time. We've got a newer TV in our second bedroom. And so I just figured, okay, I'll go for it. And what actually happened, it was very funny. I hit the buy button and I went through the process and I had the wrong shipping address chosen. I had my work address chosen and I was like, no, I do not want the TV sent to the office because then I'll have to get an Uber to
it's
get
it. Hard to put, bring a TV home on the subway. Yeah.
Well, right. Especially a 43-inch TV. You know, it was like 30 pounds. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not dealing with this. So I canceled the order, but then I can't repurchase it because I've already claimed the order once. So my colleague Raymond Wong was nice enough. Ray Ray was nice enough to buy it on his account and get it sent to my address. So using the magic of Venmo, I paid him back. But it arrived, and I'm putting it up probably after the show. So yeah, I got a TV and I got a USB thumb drive because it's 2016 and it was like $15 for like a 64 gigabyte. And I was nice. Like, why not?
You buy anything?
No.
I tried, but I was in a plane over the Atlantic and connection was slow and I missed my opportunity. And GoGo and limited time deals don't really work well together.
I'm kind of impressed that you tried.
There were a few tools and things for the garage I was looking to get. Nothing too exciting. No TVs.
Actually, I'm really interested in how you like, Christina, the Hisense. Because, you know, these guys, these are the Chinese TV companies, TCL and Hisense. Are coming on strong. Hisense took over Microsoft's massive booth at CES 2 years ago.
No, I know. I've seen their TVs before, and I've been impressed. And so I'm looking forward to it too. I mean, I know it's not going to be. Look, I'm not making any mistake in thinking it's going to be as good as like a high end Samsung or something. But for $300, frankly, that's like if it sucks or if it breaks in a year, like okay, you know, like. It actually has a four-year warranty, which is crazy. I'm like, if I'm still using this TV in 4 years, I'll be very happy. So,
isn't that funny how that's changed?
It really is.
You'd keep a TV for 10 years easy. Now, 4 years, that thing's ancient. We're at 18K.
My TV's 9 years old.
Yeah, you're that type. You're an intellectual, Tom. You don't
need... I wear the glasses now.
You probably have like a rug over the TV.
No, I don't have a. I have an old Panasonic plasma 1080p. It works.
No, that's
great.
A good TV. You don't.
Exactly. What I have too. I have a VT65.
You don't ever get rid of that.
Yeah.
Right. You get rid of the. Exactly.
Yeah. They don't make plasma anymore.
No. Was it a Curio? Is it a Curio, Tom?
Curio, yeah.
No. It's a Vixia.
I have a. That's so funny. That's our big TV in the living room. The
oh, yeah.
That's our Game of Thrones TV. That's what I call it.
At the time, which was like 2007, 2008, it was the TV.
It was the TV.
Yeah.
Yep. I think we have the same model.
That's so funny. Yeah, probably.
You know, I know I should get a new TV because...
Because you're an intellectual.
I'm an intellectual. But I don't... I resist... I don't want to get a new TV. But I'm missing out. Like the new OLEDs, everybody's, they're really good.
When 4K is like worth getting and there's tons of programming and I feel like I'm really missing out, I'll get a new TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same for me. When 4K OLEDs are attainable, I'll be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the one that everybody likes, the LG OLED, that's the one that bought the New York City TV, the value shootout, they call it, the value TV shootout, where they get the best TVs and then they have all these TV reviewers vote. And then the LG OLED won. And they make a G6 line, which is the expensive one. But then they make a B6, which is they take out like 3D. Oh, gee. Wow. I don't know how I'll live without it. They take out 3D and it's $1,000 less. That's now you're talking for a 55 inch, something like 4,500 for an OLED. So they're getting close. I mean, yes, that's still a lot more, but they're getting close.
You can have that sweet WebOS interface too, which is,
yeah.
It's got so WebOS. I love WebOS.
Award winning interface.
Do I have to swipe up?
No, but there are some cute animations as your panes fly up, and lots of pinks and magentas and things too. So
most smart TVs are dumb. I wish they would just sell me a monitor and let me apply the smartness at another place. Like,
well, the ones. In fact, I was going to ask you, Christina, does yours have like Roku built in?
It has a YouTube and Netflix built in. And
oh, it has its own,
but not a Roku.
It's not a Roku thing, but it has YouTube and Netflix. So for the 4K content, that's how it'll come in. I mean, like, I don't need a 4K TV, especially the size I got. It was cheap, and I was like, well, I can watch 4K, you know, Netflix. That'll be cool,
right?
If I can watch, you know, Game of Thrones and Orange is the New Black, and.
Well, Game of Thrones is also 4K, but you've already seen it. So.
Yeah, I've already seen it. And also, I mean, HBO, I don't believe my cable provider offers 4K.
It's probably safe to say now, it wouldn't be a spoiler, that Donald Trump becomes the president in that show. I don't think that's a spoiler. It's been long enough.
It's been long enough.
Yeah. couldn't resist it. Couldn't resist it. There was something else I wanted to bring up. It was a World Emoji Day. I was supposed to wear my world. I got the emoji people sent me a T-shirt. Yeah,
they sent me a T-shirt too and some stickers. But I left it at the office, unfortunately, so I couldn't wear it.
Forgot to wear it.
I hate that it was on a Sunday this year. But yeah, World Emoji Day.
Can you get John? I should put it on right now. It won't be too late.
Okay.
Yeah. Who sent this? The Emoji Consortium?
It was Emojipedia.
Oh, Emojipedia. Oh, okay. That's a good site.
It's a great site.
That's the site where if you don't know what the thing with the things coming out of it and the thingy is, you can go there and find out.
Well, it'll show it to you in every rendering style. So it shows it, you know, how it's rendered on Apple, on Android, on Windows, on an Emoji One, you know, on Twitter. Like, it shows you all the styles. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
There it is, Emoji.
It would be crazy if Unicode was sending people T-shirts.
Yeah.
I want a Unicode.
I wish it would. It would be crazy if Unicode would ever answer my request for comment. Like, every time I write about Emoji, I always reach out to them, and they're like, oh, go through our mailing list. I'm like, are you serious?
It's a standards body. It's difficult for them to be calling.
I know it is. Engineers.
There it is. World Emoji Day. Woo-hoo!
Congratulations.
Yay.
I'm glad it was that emoji. I was worried.
Could have been the pile of poo emoji. I don't think this is an emoji, is it? With a hat?
No, it's their own, I guess, little creation, but it's cute.
That's why Unicode doesn't support that shirt.
This is not a Unicode-compliant shirt. So there are, and if you go to Google.com, at least in the U.S., but I bet worldwide, they have a little Google Doodle. It's World Emoji Day, and it says teen girls code an emoji that's unique like you. And this is because Google was able to tell the World Emoji Consortium to actually add some female emojis with jobs instead of just what were the women the girl emojis before?
It just depended that if they're mostly just men for certain jobs. You know, it was like if you're a farmer or a doctor or whatever.
Can't be a lady farmer.
Dude.
Can't be a lady doctor. Mm-mm.
I mean, it's like, come on, Barbie was all of these things. Come on, emoji, getting stuff with Barbie, but now they are.
And a game developer.
Yeah, that's the new Barbie, though. That's not my Barbie. That's not Barbie from my era. That was only recent Barbie became anything more than just a busty.
The world is changing.
Companion to Ken, who had all the jobs.
4K TVs, female doctors. It's insanity.
So let me see these. Let me see. It's time for emoji equality. Until now, emoji represent. This is Google's madewithcode.com. Until now, emoji representing women hadn't been well representative. Let's change that. Google is working to make sure emoji include a wide range of female professions. And now we're inviting you to join the movement by coding your own. Oh, this is kind of cool.
Really cool. It's actually really cool. I'm playing with it right now. And it actually uses their blocky programming language. It's actually really awesome.
So there's a code block. Let's add a care. This is kind of like Android app inventor. Use a drop-down menu and choose a character. Olivia, Alia, Emma, Rebecca, Lily, Taylor, Mia, Valentina, Natalie, Martina. Well, there's no Christine. I'll be Emma. And then you could snap eyes in. Oh, my gosh. Let's snap in some eyes. This is kind of cool because it really is just building a character, but you can say where the position of the eyes are.
Yeah. And what code is it underneath?
Well, probably JavaScript. I don't know.
Yeah, JavaScript. Of course, JavaScript. That would make sense.
Yeah. So now I've made really the eyes off to the left a little bit. That's not good. Oh. that's kind of creepy. Actually.
You know, whatever. It's your emoji.
It's my emoji.
The eyes there.
The eyes. It's googly eyes. Let's move the eyes in a little bit. There you go.
Yeah, eyes on the chin.
Eyes on the chin. That's good. So you can make aliens too.
Yeah.
You know, and I think aliens are somewhat underrepresented in the emoji space.
There's only one.
Only one, and we know there's more aliens than that. Let's give her a mouth. This is fun. Tongue. I can choose a tongue and position the tongue. 50. Yeah, this is kind of... There you go. That's my emoji.
I think that's awesome. The Family Guy character, isn't that?
She should have
it's
a
quite
hat.
Quite psychedelic.
Yeah. It is good. I like it. What kind of hat would you wear if you were... if you looked like that? A flower crown?
Oh, no. Flower crown. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
On her chin, though.
On her chin? No, wait. Let's raise that. Oh, lower it. Okay, there you go.
There you go.
Flower choker now.
Flower choker. I'm done. And what happens when you're done? What you learned? You learned how to change the position of an object with X, Y values, and I can now download it. Very nice. And
I have, it's great.
And I have my, this is going to be my my new Twitter profile picture. Actually, I did one earlier this week, and I used Prisma on it. You know, to take a selfie and then, but Prisma brings out lines and stuff and shadows. And I didn't really notice it, but then I used it and somebody said, dude, your emoji looks like Hitler. And I looked at it and I realized it does. So I backed down. But this doesn't look like Hitler. I don't know.
No.
This is a safe emoji.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's the exorcist emoji.
For those listening to the audio podcast, we're not going to try to describe it.
You'll just have to go to Twitter. My new. This actually, this is great. You could use this for all your profile pictures everywhere. Let's see. Oh, I know what I want to do. We had a fun week, an interesting week. We talked about Pokemon Go pretty much incessantly all week. I'm curious. Let's see if the promo this week features any Pokemon. At all.
Previously on Twit.
I thought for sure this would be the first show I've done all week that doesn't mention Pokemon Go. Can you turn that down?
Walls of heaven.
The new screensavers.
This is $49. It's the Pocket Chip.
And
what it really is a full Linux computer plus keyboard.
You could prototype inside of it and take it apart. So it has no glue and no screws. And of course, the entire thing, the hardware, the software, all the designs are completely open source.
This Week in Law.
Now we have two fascinating guests, both working at the forefront of AI when it comes to the law.
Do Not Pay is a chatbot to help people with their low-level legal problems, for example, parking tickets or delayed flights. From my experience, you have these guys copying and pasting templates into Microsoft Word and then charging $100 to do so. And I think that's just the perfect thing to be kind of disrupted by technology.
Security Now.
We got to talk about Russia's President Putin, whether his shirt is on or off. He ordered the Federal Security Service Bureau to produce encryption keys capable of decrypting all data on the internet. But no one's really sure exactly what that means.
Twit, broadcasting from the capital of the free world, Petaluma, California.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's been a strange week.
Yep.
Leo's off getting Pokemons again.
He is. He's out looking for
them. They caught me. Megan Maroney has a look at the week. I should have you do this, Tom. He's getting chills down his back. He doesn't just know. Megan Maroney has a look at the week ahead.
Thanks, Leo. Coming up this week on Tech News Today, July 18th is the final deadline for bids on Yahoo. Anyone want it? You? This week, we'll also see earnings from some of the biggest names in tech, including the aforementioned Yahoo, as well as IBM, Netflix, Qualcomm, Intel, and Microsoft. BitTorrent's live streaming TV news network also launches this week, bringing the Republican National Convention straight to you and your devices live. And for those security-minded among us, RSA Asia takes place this week in Singapore with keynote speeches from Bruce Schneier and others. We'll cover these stories and more on Tech News Today at 4 p.m. Pacific, Monday through Friday.
Thank you so much, Megan Maroney, the host of TNT iOS today. In fact, we're going to do that show. She's back from vacation. We'll do that show tomorrow. Who's on Triangulation tomorrow, Karsten? Are we going to do, is Alan Cooper on tomorrow?
Virginia Heffernan.
Oh!
Author of Magic and Loss.
Virginia Heffernan. I can't wait. She's a New York Times writer and was the first, and I'm going to call her on this, to write about TWiT in the New York Times. She said we were obsessively tech-focused. And I made that our motto for some time. Remember that, Tom? Maybe it was before your time.
Yeah, yeah. I always thought that was funny because it's like, yeah,
that's
whole,
right.
Yeah, you got it.
She
you
was doing it. I think she thought she was insulting us. But no,
I don't know if she thought she was insulting, but it did seem like it was a little on the nose, maybe.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask Megan a question. Is she gone already?
Yeah. Stop it. Yeah, sorry. Oh, she left. She was out Pokemon hunting with her family. Virginia's new book is actually kind of interesting. It's called Magic and Loss, The Internet as Art, The Logic and Aesthetics Behind the Internet. Is that fascinating or what? I don't even know. I don't know where to begin. I know.
She just says, as Susan Sontag and Marshall McLuhan, she's getting compared to in the description.
That's an interesting blurb. I don't know if I would let my publisher compare me to Susan Sontag and Marshall McLuhan, but there you have it. There you have it. Life online in the highly visual, social, portable, and global incarnation. We'll talk about that tomorrow. And then Alan Cooper, the inventor of Visual Basic, in a week. Maybe. Someday.
Possibly.
We're working on him. Let's see here. FBI says, hey, when we write malware, it's not malware. You know why? Because we're the good guys. Okay. I'll take their word for it.
I don't think any of us really have anything to say about that. I mean, it's an obviously true statement. So
yes.
Right. Right. There's obviously nothing wrong with that at all.
This is, this is when the FBI was running its own child pornography site. So
right on Tor, right?
Yeah. So is that, the good news is that in several cases, the judges have thrown that out. But the FBI filing a legal brief said a reasonable person or society would not interpret the actions taken by a law enforcement officer pursuant to a court order to be malicious. How could that be?
Well, pursuant to a court order is the key there, right? If the court responsibly has said you get to tap a telephone line, then it's not against the law. And
exactly.
The problem is we don't have good, clear law about what you're allowed to do on the internet. Because I am a little bit sympathetic to the FBI saying, well, if you're trying to tap an internet connection, like a particular specific person that we have probable cause about, we may not know where they are. But that doesn't give them the excuse to then say, so we never have to know where anyone is and we get to tap anyone we want. Like, there needs to be a balance there.
Well, right. And this is precisely why judges have thrown out some of these decisions, because they said the FBI did not have a warrant to run a child pornography site or to use malware to crack Tor. They just did it.
Right. Creating a honeypot, to try to catch, creeps. I don't think anybody's defending the people that they're going after. When you don't have a court order, when you're just going off the hip and thinking, oh, we'll just get permission later. That doesn't work. That's not okay.
No. Galaxy Note 7, probably, right? Being launched August 2nd. You're probably in New York. You're going to go to the Samsung Unhinged event. That's not what they call it.
They're unlocked.
I like that.
Unhinged. It's unboxed. Yeah, no, I'll be there. And yeah, no, it seems like what they're going to be doing, the rumor is that they'll be changing the naming convention. They've been a year behind. It's been they're skipping the Note 6 and just going straight to Note 7, which makes sense because you've got like the S7, the S7 Edge, and it's always weird to then have the Note 6. So it makes sense to have them have the same number.
Looks pretty.
Samsung just always ripping off Microsoft with their naming convention. Skipping numbers.
Just skipping ahead.
Just like, you know, we don't want this. Maybe they're just concerned, you know, maybe 6 is unlucky for them for some reason. Who knows? But yeah.
By the way, a little public service announcement. In case you didn't know, you can get a free upgrade to Windows 10. Did you know that? If you're no surprise,
someone would have told us.
I wish they'd let us know.
Let me close this pop up on my desktop.
I was gonna say, I think I just got one. It installed. I accidentally clicked an X, and it installed it anyway.
Yeah,
right. Of course, that works.
Paul Thurrott, of course, our Windows Weekly host, was talking about how his wife, who you know, she's married to one of the premier Windows journalists in the world. She saw that box. She just dragged it off the screen, like to this corner of the screen, which is what normal people do. I don't know what this is. I don't want it, but I'm just going to put it over here. And, of course, she got Windows 10 as a result. Anyway, that is going to run out in 12 days. We're almost done. Mike, as Satya Nadella this week said, that's the future. There's no new Windows ever again. This is it. Windows is now software as a service.
Yeah.
That's why they're being so pushy about trying to get people to upgrade.
Exactly. Because they promised this, a billion devices by 2018 or something. And like, that's a really tall order. I think they're you know, 300 or 400 million in. Like, I'm not sure they're going to meet that.
They even say it now. They're not. They
backpedaled on it. Yeah. They said, we were counting on a lot more Windows phones when we made that prediction.
Whoops.
So
like,
I can't remember the exact words now, but they're like,
that's funny.
Involved more focus on the phone market. Yeah.
And they're like, you mean that $9 billion you spent and then basically wrote off. And okay, good work there. Good job. Go team.
That was Steve Ballmer's fault.
We were going to.
It was.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. That's all right. I can't blame Steve. He was a vivacious.
He's in a better place now.
He is. Honestly, he's living his best life, and we all wish that we could be.
I'm
genuinely so happy for him. Like you know that this is just literally what he was meant to do. He is living his best life, you know, as a sports team owner, getting to yell and cheer and you know, scream, you know, players, and it's great.
And they're successful. A team that was successful. That's amazing.
Well, again, because he's like the ultimate, I mean, again, he's living his best life, and we can only all wish that our retirements could be that fruitful and amazing.
Yeah. Well, if you have a couple of billion dollars lying around, you could buy it. NBA team.
It'll make anybody's retirement a lot better.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. Then we'll talk about the Yahoo deal and kind of wrap it up. I think we're running low on fumes here, almost out of gas. This show brought to you by Squarespace, the place to make your next website. I love this. It starts with the templates, a gorgeous Squarespace templates. I got a really nasty tweet because I said, you don't need a web designer. And the guy's a web designer. He said, you're putting me out of work. Well, sorry. But frankly, unless you're a big corporation, and you can afford to spend a lot of money. You're better off going to Squarespace because they have the best designers, the best engineers designing these new templates. You start with a template and you get state-of-the-art design. And by the way, the design, you know, kind of it's very fashion driven. So you're going to get the latest, greatest looks. But when a new one comes along, you push a button and it's easy. You just apply a new template. Your content's all there. And they're all the best engineering, all the state-of-the-art stuff like mobile responsive design, which means your site, you don't have a separate mobile site. Your site looks good on every size screen. They have some new templates. Actually, this is a kind of a new thing they can do. You can put multiple templates on one website and work on multiple designs at once. So suddenly the whole thing, the template space is really opened up because the sky's the limit. You can do anything. They have these great magazine templates, grid style landing pages, infinite scroll, related posts, author profiles, search in the header, all of that. You can now get e-commerce in every single site. And it's good, too. It's the e-commerce that you would want. It doesn't look like it's a afterthought. It looks like it's the design of your site. So people feel good about it. They're like in the same spot. And boy, it's all so affordable. Plus, you get a free custom domain name with an annual purchase. access to 24/7 customer support. They do domains now, which is really nice. Support for over 200 top-level domains, all the big ones and some wild ones, too. And if you have an idea, but you're not, yeah, Pokemon Go. There you go. We need to do a site. Let's see what we can get. They'll give you a great, there's .com, there's .net, .org, .info. And if you're not ready to do the site yet, they'll give you a landing page. It doesn't have ads on it. It's just gorgeous. Look at all of these. I love it. They just introduced analytics for commerce, allowing you to view the traffic of your visitors in real time. And things like abandoned checkouts, device filtering, and more. This is the point, is that you sign up, you're part of the Squarespace family, and you get all of this automatically because it's the best hosting and the best software. Security updates, upgrades, new features all come with the territory. And members who have built or contributed to three or more active Squarespace websites now can join the Squarespace Circle. Circle membership includes advanced guides, optimized support, six-month trial periods for new projects, and more. And the nice thing about a Squarespace site is you design it, it's going, and it goes, and it goes, and it goes. It just never goes down. Squarespace.com. You can try it for free, but if you go there and you decide to buy, may I suggest you use the offer code TWIT? Because not only will they then say, oh, you heard about it on TWIT, but they will also give you 10% off as a little thank you. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWIT. So it's finally happening tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Yahoo will be sold. The gavel. Was that a golf clap?
It was.
The gavel. Yahoo.
Our long national nightmare.
It's over. Final bids for the services, that is search, that's email, that's advertising, that's media operations, due tomorrow. The board will make a decision quickly after. I think the board probably already knows who they are going to award it to, I would guess. Verizon seems to me the inside track. They would probably merge it with AOL. And I don't know. What could you do? You could do Yahoo. Somehow merge them. But AOL is kind of a similar property, right? It's not. It's still got a lot of traffic. There's still a lot of content. There's a lot of.
I mean. The Yahoo homepage, I think, is more than the AOL homepage. But, yeah, I mean, you know, they've got programmatic advertising and media content and video and other stuff. So, yeah.
AT&T.
It's an ad tech buy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Ad tech, totally. Ad tech and numbers and, you know, data.
Yeah, an audience. Yeah.
Yeah. AT&T also in the mix, apparently, including Quicken Loans co-founder Dan Gilbert with support from Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. Actually, a number of equity firms interested. Probably they would chop it up and sell it off for pieces, for parts, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
See a Ziff Davis-like effect on it, probably.
Yeah. Boy, it's amazing when you see what happened to Ziff Davis. After we worked for ZD, of course, Tom and I.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was owned by SoftBank when you joined us, right?
Correct, yes. I was under Masayoshi-san.
I worked for Ziff Davis for 10 years and had four different owners. and now it's owned by, weirdly enough, Ziff Davis is owned by, I can't remember.
Well, CNET owns ZDNet still.
Right.
And owns the domain name for ZDTV.com or
but
did.
But like PC Magazine and Extreme Tech.
But yeah, what's left is Ziff Davis Media. Well, Ziff Davis Media got split up into two different pieces too. There's different equity firms were behind it.
That's what'll happen. Yeah.
And so that may be what happens to Yahoo. I'm with Christina. I think Verizon is probably the best bet to get Yahoo.
Yeah.
It just makes the most sense to me.
It makes a ton of sense. Now, do we think that Tim Armstrong will be given control over both?
Yes.
I would say so, yeah.
In fact, that makes sense. 5G, very interesting. Federal government, President Obama says, we're in the National Science Foundation, we're going to put $400 million into 5G over the next few years.
That's not a lot of money, though.
$400 million.
It's the same thing, Christina.
Honestly, it's not for the infrastructure. Are you kidding me? That's like a drop in the bucket.
But we got to first do research, right? I mean, we got to, or no. Do they already have the technologies?
They already have the research.
So it's just putting it in?
It's rollout. It's spectrum allocation. Yeah. The FCC has voted to make spectrum available for it. It's standardization still has to come. It hasn't actually been voted on a standard. But the same thing happened with 4G. People were rolling out implementations before the standard.
And they have
final.
Private industry involved as well. Maybe there'll be more money. I mean, Samsung and the carriers are putting.
The carriers for sure. Because the last thing that anybody wants is for us to have what we had here, which was what was Sprint's terrible thing called, their phone version of 4G.
WiMAX.
WiMAX was this LTE debate. And we all knew that like WiMAX was dead. We were like, Sprint, what are you doing? And Sprint was like, no, we swear it'll be good. It wasn't. So, I mean, we can't
still
have
big in Japan. They have WiMAX too, even.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was early optimist about WiMAX.
We all were.
When it was only Sprint, I knew the writing was on the wall.
We all were. Yeah.
Same. When it was very clear that it was only Sprint who was going to be involved, it was like, oh, well, that's over.
Yeah.
Nice try. Good luck there.
HTC also participating, Intel, Oracle, Nokia, not Apple, Google, or Microsoft. They're not getting involved.
No, I mean, I think Apple and Google are smart enough to recognize that once there's a standard, they'll sign on board, but they don't need to be involved in it earlier than that. Right. If you're a chipset provider, you know, if you're a Qualcomm or someone, I mean, maybe you care more if you're, you know, a radio provider like Ericsson, but if you're not doing those things, I mean, why bother?
Yeah, I mean, Google, if they got involved, that would be very telling for their plans for Project 5.
Yeah. That's very true, which that was some other news this week. They, if you can now... get international 4G with Project Fi for the same price.
Yeah, LTE.
Yeah.
Yeah, LTE, which is amazing. I mean, like, that's seriously unreal. Yeah.
I signed up for Project Fi right away because I'm going to be traveling internationally.
Isn't
and
that
even
awesome?
Though I have T-Mobile only gives me 2G. A slower level of service, which is nice.
Yeah, which is great. But if you're going to be in Japan, you don't want your 2G on T-Mobile. So you might as well take a Nexus, you know, 6P or whatever. Or whatever.
Exactly.
And get a $10 a gigabyte or whatever it is, which is awesome.
So you pay the same rate in 15 countries that you pay in the U.S. for high speed, and you get full high speed.
You get the fastest speed available is what they say. Now, I don't know if that means available in our partners or available. Yeah. I imagine it means
from
our partners.
Yeah, partners for sure.
Yeah,
3 is their partner now in the U.K. 3 is a very good carrier in the U.K. I don't know what they're doing in Japan, but yeah,
I think they used 3's roaming partners to kind of get into the international market.
That's smart. Okay.
That seems
to
be what they did.
Well, right. If you're leaving in September, that's probably when there'll be a new Nexus phone or phones. That might be the time to pick one up, get a Fi chip and go for it. The 5G story, data rates in the tens of megabits a second, but even higher, a gigabit per second in some cases. Lots of efficiency, better coverage, latency significantly reduced compared to LTE. I'm looking at the Wikipedia article about 5G. Now, don't get all excited because according to this, the Next Generation Mobile Networks Alliance is calling for 5G to be rolled out by 2020. So we're a few years off.
We're a couple years away, but I mean, at least... We have already seen, I think, just how much faster LTE rolled out than a lot of us were expecting. Once it finally got over, like, was it going to be WiMAX or LTE? And once, you know, the bigger manufacturers jumped on board, you know, that rollout, which at first the carriers were kind of reticent to do, came fast. I think we can thank the iPhone for a lot of that. But I think, you know, just for kind of forcing, you know, the carriers were just saying, well, now we've really got to blanket the place with it. But now, I mean, you know, I haven't even in places that there are a few rural pockets where you won't find LTE in the United States. But, you know, it's come faster and faster. And I think that'll only be good things once the 5G rollout happens. And yeah, that's, you know, 4 or 5 years away. But that's still in the grand scheme of things, not terrible for wireless gigabit, which is a great thing to think about.
I just hope that the marketing companies just call it 5G this time. They don't have to do the 5G LTE thing, which of course was necessitated by the WiMAX thing. Maybe just 5G, leave it that, it'll be good.
Well, and what happened was T-Mobile started calling their HSPA Plus 4G when it wasn't 4G. So don't anybody call something 5G if it's not actually 5G.
But you know they will. They're not
going to. Yeah, it'll be like 4.5G, and they'll be calling it, which, you know, is what has happened, HSPA Plus. Yeah, they'll be like, oh, but it's 5G. It's a marketing term. And we're like, no, actually, it's not, but thank you. Yeah.
Some LTE advanced implementation is going to get called 5G. Ugh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. You're so right. It is. The next LTE advanced is going to. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's totally happening.
So the DARPA Grand Challenge brought us autonomous vehicles. It was amazing. In just a few years, cars went from running off the road after 30 feet to driving long distances. The new DARPA Grand Challenge is a cyber challenge. August 4th, in between Black Hat and DEF CON in Las Vegas, computers are going to hack each other. Seven fully autonomous computers will face off in a historic battle to each to try to defend themselves and point out flaws without any human intervention.
That's awesome.
That is, I'm telling you, it's seven teams of finalists with names like Deep Red and Kojitsu were given a DARPA-constructed computer. Their task, program it to be able to recognize and understand previously undisclosed software, find its flaws, and fix it. And once the challenge starts, no human involvement. That's it.
That's so cool.
The machines have
doesn't
to come.
Sound quite as exciting as cars driving.
It won't be much fun to watch.
Things, no. But it is interesting.
But what will be fun, the team that wins gets $2 million.
Awesome.
Second and third, $1,750,000. So there's some incentive here.
Yeah, $2 million plus immediate interest in signing them on to provide security.
You're hired.
Yeah, seriously.
I presume people are working on this right now. I think this is very cool.
Well, what does this do to putting malicious hackers out of work, though? Do we need a
Well, we can only hope. We can but hope. The world's first all-machine hacking tournament. I hope there's lots of lights, because otherwise it will be very boring just to watch. And now he seems to be...
There should be lights and there should be, like, bells, you know.
Thinking
every time something is hacked or repaired, you get another bing.
It's computing. Yes, it's still computing. Wow, talk about watching grass grow.
I don't know. It could be exciting if you had casters who knew what they were talking about. Like,
exactly.
You can see he's trying to get around the firewall here, but watch.
Oh, he's trying another buffer overflow, but no, it's thwarted. Quick divide by zero, and yes.
And he slams those ports closed before he can get to them.
Can we clutch get some move. Esports commentators involved? Like, can we like combine those two worlds?
It would be funny.
I think it is like an old school hockey commentator to talk about closing ports down. I think it'd be the best.
I think Father Robert's going down. It's hard to get people to go there. A lot of the people we work with say, no, not going anywhere near DEF CON. Mm-mm. But I think Father Robert goes down, and he usually sanitizes his.
He knows what he's getting
his inputs
down.
Before.
Yeah, no, down. Yeah, you know, you go down there with like a dummy laptop and phone, yeah. Like you're yeah. like yeah, yeah. just
yeah.
in case.
Yeah, bring a Nokia candy bar phone.
Yeah, and a Chromebook
rotary
that's locked into a profile that doesn't belong, like a dummy profile. And
hey,
like,
speaking
okay.
of Chromebooks, boy, I had a happy occurrence on Thursday. I rebooted my Chromebook Pixel. I'd put it in developer mode some time ago, and lo and behold, the Android store, the Play Store, popped up.
Ooh. You playing Pokemon Go on it?
You can. It's a little weird. You have to have GPS and it doesn't know where you are. But other than that...
You just spoof the GPS, then you don't have to even leave.
You just spoof the GPS and you can be anywhere, Leo. You can literally go anywhere.
Ooh! Now we're talking! But never move more than 5 miles an hour, and you're golden.
You know about it was a YouTuber, and I wish I could remember his name, who used BlueStacks and spoofed GPS.
Oh,
smart
to do that.
All right, I'll have to look into that. I did install a number of apps to see. Many of them are, you know, kind of like you have a phone on your screen, but some are smart enough to go full screen. Snapseed, for instance, which is a great Google photo editing program. It works like a desktop program. It's pretty cool.
Awesome.
And if you have a Pixel, and I think that they are kind of encouraging touch for there's only right now it's three Chromebooks. More to come in the fall, and you have to be in the developer track to do it. It's buggy. It got some real slowdowns, like weird things going on. But nevertheless, the fact that you could run Android apps on your Chromebook really adds a whole nother layer of capability.
When are they just going to fuse the two projects?
Well, I think that's where they're going, right?
I've been predicting that for years, and I've been told by like the Android and Google watchers, no, you're wrong. And I'm like, no, but
really,
like
seriously,
come on,
yeah,
we. Do you need to have two separate stacks? Because you've got two versions of Linux happening right now. Like, just merge them into one thing.
Right. It just adds like 2 million apps now that you can run. And by the way, I did not notice any attempt to restrict the apps you could get. Like, oh, this, like with Android TV, you could only get a small subset of the total store. It looked like the whole store was there, even if the app made no sense on a Chromebook.
I'm curious what the end of that road is, because Microsoft's trying to do the same thing to say we have one operating system on multiple platforms, and Google's taking a different approach. I think they don't know whether they will actually merge Chrome OS and Android. They're just trying things to see how they work, and this is the next step.
Well,
yeah, I think that's a good point, because it's a different implementation. I mean, it is a slightly different user interface. Yeah. I guess for me, what I could see them doing at some point would be if Android becomes developed enough, have the same, you know, Chrome that's running on the desktop on Chrome OS and Android literally being the same branch. And that would at least get you closer.
Yeah, I have a Pixel C, and I would love to have some of the Chrome ability, Chrome OS ability over there. Yeah,
I had such high hopes for that, and I ended up
that's not a great experience.
Yeah, too bad. We're out of time. What a fun show! Great to have you all, Tim Stevens. He's now the host of the Road Show. If you're into automobiles, that thing is becoming a juggernaut. I mean, this is like you got a whole team now. You got people all over the world. Really good.
We do, yeah. We got a great team. We got folks in London and Detroit and San Francisco. I'm in New York. And yeah, a lot of great stuff and a lot of great news and reviews. So check it out.
What are you most excited about in the automotive world?
Well, in just a couple weeks, I'm going to Reno, Nevada to see a certain battery factory that's opening up soon. So tune in a couple weeks.
Ooh, that is exciting. Actually, we just got an invitation to go down and visit one of, there are a number of Hyperloop projects going on. They're all funded by angel investors who are excited about the prospects of Hyperloop, and we're going down, I think, to San Jose to look at one of the companies that's starting to do some Hyperloop development, I believe. And Russia apparently is all in on Hyperloop. Who knew?
They want you to think that.
Yeah. Oh, we do it. It's going to be great. Right after we get to Moon. The story on that, Jason Calacanis told us some months ago, is not necessarily the San Francisco to L.A. super train that they've talked about, that Elon's talked about, but really for cargo and undersea cargo. And imagine if you had a Hyperloop from, let's say, Asia to the West Coast. And you could, instead of on container ships, but you could very rapidly move goods back and forth. That would be
a long Hyperloop.
Well, the nice thing about that is it's there's no humans, so if there's an issue, no lives are lost.
Yeah, you could have a submerged tube that would kind of float like a transatlantic cable kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very interesting. All right. Thank you, Tom Merritt, DTNS, DailyTechNewsShow.com, DailyTechHeadlines.com. Support him on Patreon, and you'll find him searching the Pokemon as Ace Detect.
That's right. We've always, every day, covering the tech news and having good conversations on Daily Tech News Show. And if that's too long, Daily Tech Headlines exists as just a brief update for people at DailyTechHeadlines.com.
Nice. Thank you so much. Always great to see you.
I can see you too, Leo.
You should come back more often. I know Sundays, it's hard to get people on Sunday.
Yeah.
They go out, they do things, they're having a life.
Chase
they
Pokemon.
Hunt Pokemon.
We try to focus on people who don't have lives here.
Or hunt Pokemon.
It's a lot easier to get them. Christina Warren, film girl. She not only has a life, she has a new TV. You'll find her.
New TV.
Yeah, baby. Mashable.com. It's great to see you as always.
Always great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And Christina's also a regular on Tech News Today. We see a lot of her there. Thank you for being here. We love having you come by on Saturday afternoon, about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, Sunday afternoon. What day is today? Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. If you can join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv, we encourage you to do so. What did I forget? I said hi to Tim. Tim, did I ignore you?
I said hello. And I wish
I Why are you saying Tim? Did I call him Tom? Okay. I know there's Tom and Tim. Yeah, there's also Tim Tams, a fine candy cookie from Australia, but they're not related.
Tim Bits, if you're up Tim in Canada, Bits, the lovely donut holes.
Tim Horton, delicious. Yep. Mm-hmm. Late, great Tim Horton, hockey star. We do the show, as I said, every Sunday afternoon. But if you can't watch live, do get the on-demand audio or video. You'll find that at twit.tv. All our shows are on the website or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to join us in studio, we love it. We have a great studio audience today. Nice to have you all. I love your shirt, sir. I love that shirt. I'm going to steal it from you. And we also have a studio member who's wearing a Nintendo controller, and the shirt says classically trained. I think that's
nice.
Yeah. That, are you ready? You're excited for the little Nintendo NES that's coming out? Oh boy, that'll be fun.
So good.
Doesn't it take cartridges even?
No, it's all 30 games inside.
It's all built in.
It's just like the old Atari flashback, but it's so cool.
Still, if you grew up with
I'm
Nintendo.
I'm buying one.
Absolutely. Pokemon's on there, I'm sure. I would hope.
No, there was never a Pokemon NES.
Oh, no.
Oh,
no,
that was a test. You passed it. Very good. I didn't know. I'm impressed. No, as a matter of fact, the Pokemon was never on the Super NES. I think you're mistaken.
Never.
Never. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
Yay! This is amazing.
Yay!